The yellow flag has been shown. The red flag is being taken away. The lights will go to red. For the last time this season, the lights change.
Away they go. Good start from Danny Pedrosa. When we never said that.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 308 for Wednesday, the 29th of February, 2012. So happy leap year to Jim Race, who's with me here in California. Ooh, with a, I guess that's an oil can, huh?
It would be an oil can.
And I'm going to do this. Let's see. Oh, that's lame.
Ah!
That was a Dos Equis.
Yeah.
You know, I don't bullshit often, but when I do, it's on Motopod.
I like that.
Right.
This is going to be a great show for you guys. We've got crap jewels. We've got a bevy and a shitload of interviews. I mean, there's no other way you can put it. We've got one that I'm supposed to do, and this is what I love about the show because we're kind of time shifting. I've got one that I'm supposed to do in a bit. And with a MotoGP star, we've got another one that we'll do with a Moto2 person, that being Damian Kedlin. And then a whole ton of interviews from our man, Phil Hall, who took care of us down at Phillip Island World Superbike. It's going to be killer.
I can't wait to hear those.
Yeah, this should be fun. In the meantime, we did have...
Just as a reminder, this is the same Phil Hall that did the classic island races when Edwin Hazer was over there about a month ago.
Yep, and he did a killer job for us then, and he's done a killer job for us again. And it was funny because I talked to him a couple of times on the phone, and I sent him a text right after the first time I talked to him, when just after he'd arrived at the track. And I said, dude, you sound like a kid in a candy store. And I got back a text, and he says, I am.
Yeah.
Which is fun because, you know, he's a guy that's a little bit older than I am, and I'm no spring chicken. So it was very good to see his enthusiasm. That clearly comes through in all of the interviews he did. So you guys are going to be in for a treat.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's
very quickly do some listener feedback.
Okay.
We got one email from Douglas Edmiston, who said, speaking of crazy shit going on with innovation in Moto2, it's a real shame no teams want to run FTR's stemless steering chassis. In a series where you can't do anything to the engine to get more power, having that steamless steering design where it's a straight shot from the outside of the air intake to the engine, only the air filter posing as an obstacle, would be a massive advantage at getting more power from the bike. In my opinion, CEV is a much better place to watch for innovation with Moto3 and Moto2 bikes, as those teams have less at stake if it doesn't work, and more to gain if it does. Just look at the Virus 986-987 M2 bike that has raced in the CEV championship. I'm also not 100% sure on this, but I do believe there will be CRT bikes racing this year in CEV as well, against the Formula Extreme bikes, which is I did not realize that.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you think about it, Jules, it kind of makes sense because you need a testing ground, that being CEV, where you don't have these massive amounts of sponsorship, and massive is a relative term, by the way. So you might as well use the Spanish Championship, that being CEV, which is what it is. To kind of test out your concepts and whatnot. You know, guys want to come into Moto2 and actually gather some points, either in the CRT class or in Moto2. And so results, they do matter. And, you know, the opportunity to shine, regardless, you don't want to be a dog. You know, you don't want to come in and be a last place finisher. And so,
yeah.
Use the smaller championships, the national championships, and CEV is obviously no slouch. We know that an awful lot of good Spaniards have come up from there, very quite obviously. But it's a place for you to test unusual concepts out.
Yeah, and to answer the first part of it, this is the thing about these Moto2 engines is that they're probably pretty close to as efficient as an ICE can be, you know, given the design of the actual motor. It's and it is a standard. So I'm pretty sure that if you, you know, were to make a different kind of design like this where more air is available to the motor, yeah, you might get more power out of certain in certain situations, but I think you're also going to go through your fuel load faster. And one of the things that I realize is that I don't actually know, and we should definitely make a point out of asking, you know, people like Andrea Oliari or one of those, you know, one of the our friends in the Moto2 circuit, you know, how closely they have to watch the fuel in Moto2 races. I mean, you'd imagine that they are using as much as possible.
True. Right? I never thought about that. You know, we focus a lot on fuel usage in the MotoGP category, but because you don't see guys running out of gas in Moto2.
No, you don't. But I'm sure that they
use it all.
Their best to use as much of it as possible, right? I mean, they've got a certain allotment. Life.
There's no point in having any left at the end. So
yeah.
Because it does weigh a few pounds,
which means that I think that in this case, if you were throwing more, if the efficiency wasn't going to, you know, increase much in terms of like if you weren't losing efficiency right now, then you'd probably just be burning more fuel, and then you'd have other kinds of issues. That's just my, you know, sort of like half engineer hat on.
Back of the napkin, you know, yeah. sketch it apart. But I will point out, Douglas, that there have been some very, very cool designs that have been incorporated into string heads where they do have, I wish I could remember which chassis it is, but they're nearly stemless steering heads, and it's very, very cool the way that they work. And when you see it, you know, naked, if you will, ooh, I said naked, they're amazing. So it's not a massive, huge innovation. It's simply a kind of an update on what we're talking about. Now, I'll see if Jules, remind me and see if we can't find a photo of their chassis, because it is cool. And I remember seeing it a bit ago.
Cool.
What else we got going on?
Actually, I'm gonna skip the second one for the last. So Rick Allen, otherwise known as Fikine, as Jim just pointed out earlier, that's probably what it means. On Twitter, was asking about Indy. We'll do a much more detailed kind of like, here's what you do at Indy when we get closer to Indianapolis. But if you're starting to make your plans now, I would not sweat too much the grandstand seating, because as much as it's a huge place and there are spots like the E grandstand, which is probably going to sell out first. And that's a good place to watch the front straight and turns 1 through 6 or so. Really, the best thing to do, and I feel the same way about this at every circuit. You know, when I used to go without the camera, and even now, I just like to walk around. And I think that Indy, even though it's huge, it's a little bit overwhelming how huge it is. It's that in the infield is where the really fun stuff happens. Yeah. And as much as I love watching them go down the straight, because it is very impressive, it's like the back straight, and it's pretty easy to get there. And there's, you know, both sides of the track have places where you can kind of hang out, and there's hills so you can get a view over people's heads and stuff. So I wouldn't sweat the grandstand too much. If you do go order your tickets early, get them in E, because that's the best view of the straight. But I have a feeling that you won't spend that much time in the grandstand.
Every time that I've gone to a GP, I spend all my time on the infield, because that means that I can get to every corner, or you know, at least here in the States. Indy's funny, because I still have yet to make it down to the last couple of corners yet.
It's a haul, man. It's a haul.
Yeah, I know.
One last listener feedback. from Doug Luxton, who writes in it a lot. And he just wrote one sentence, and he said, I'm curious, what were your two or three most entertaining races of the 2011 season? And we never really did a 2011 review, and I don't want to do that now, obviously. But, you know, for me, it was probably Phillip Island, the fight for second with Simoncelli and Dovizioso, which was just brilliant. And then the rain started falling. It was just crazy. Valencia, obviously, was a good race for once. Valencia usually is not a good MotoGP race, but we had a really good race this time. And I liked Jerez, the wet, because it was just so crazy.
I can't disagree. I really can't. Okay. I'll add one in simply because I was there for that, and it was fun, and I was chilling out with Mark Miller, but Laguna was a blast for me.
Yeah, did you actually watch the race?
Most of it. I sat there and commentated and drank beer with Mark Miller. So, I mean, that kind of, you know, it kind of made that weekend for me.
Yeah. That was a great weekend. And if you guys want to write in, if you haven't written in before, this is a good topic to write in about. Tell us what you think. What rounds did you enjoy? What rounds do you remember?
Yeah.
Because that's the first thing, right? You got to remember, you know, like I remember Le Mans, but I don't exactly remember it fondly. I thought it was kind of a hokey situation, but whatever.
Well, it is France.
Yeah, no. I was thinking about the Simoncelli getting penalized and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, good question.
Every time I hear the name Simoncelli, I just kind of get maudlin.
Yeah. I don't think that'll ever change.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't. All right, so you were going to start talking about MotoGP. So we obviously are in Sepang over there, and they just wrapping up right now. It's 11 o'clock in the evening here in the States.
Casey Stoner is still tweeting.
Yeah, exactly. They're still in the garages, I think, kind of shutting down.
And we should point out, and if we haven't, that Casey Stoner is now on Twitter, ta-da,
right.
and won't shut the fuck up. So I'm quite amused, and apparently so are the rest of the GP writers. All of them, the top guys, have been on there for a while. And apparently Stoner got a new phone and got on Twitter, and he and so the last couple of days have been hella funny, dude, because they have been bullshitting between themselves nonstop.
Yeah, it's great because unlike, you know, other forms of text communication, everybody gets to watch.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like total voyeur land, and they have a tendency to respond to the fans, or at least the ones that they, you know, feel like that are funny, that keep them amused. And so it's a very, very different thing. I'm very surprised how well a lot of them have taken to it. It's funny because Carl Fogarty, who's a total technophobe, or was, he wouldn't even try and do a call with us. You know, I've been trying to get James and Carl on at the same time for ages. And then he jumps on Twitter. And so I was giving James Whittam the other day through text shit because I said, are you gonna let Carl beat you on Twitter? He's like, oh fuck no.
Awesome.
So just a howl. But we may have a little bit of that in here. We're gonna have hopefully two interviews, but at least one with Damien Cudlin, who's riding in Moto2 for the QMMF squad. This will roll one, maybe two. The second one you guys will totally love. So should we do it, Jules?
Yeah, let's go.
All right.
Hey, this is Jim Race for MotoPod with Damien Cudlin, a Moto2 rider on the QMMF racing team. Sorry, Damo. Running a Moriwaki chassis with the Honda spec engine. Dude, you've been doing some testing, keeping a busy boy, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, look, it's going to be a packed schedule this year as well. You know, I've got a lot on my plate with the Moto2 championship as well as the Endurance World Championship for BMW. So pack schedule and two world championships to try and tackle. And but you know, it's an exciting one too, and I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a while where you weren't even sure that you were going to have a ride, and that's been the case with a lot of guys, but it seems like you're in with a good team. You're trying to tame the beast that is your Moto2 bike, and she's not been very nice to you of late, has she?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's like any new relationship, mate. You know, you got to work out what they like and what they don't like, and it's no different with this, you know. It's you know, we've just met and we're in the honeymoon stage, mate, you know. And so yeah, look, it's like that anyway. I sort of like to speak of it like going to work for the first time too, you know. It's like if you work in an office, first time you go to work, you need to adjust the seat and set up your computer screen the way you like it, and you know, put your pencils and paper where you want it. And you know, it's a bit the same when you go racing a motorbike. I mean, there's a lot of things that I like to have done my way, and I like a certain way, and you know, that we need to, you know, get that system in place. So I'm happy with the way everything works there, and also with the bike as well. You know, it's you know, even though the Moto2 category is relatively controlled, you know, we're all on the same motor, we're all on the same tyres. There's not, you know, any electronics. So, you know, that's three major parts of the motorcycle that are controlled. Even though those things are controlled, it makes the other things really, really important, you know?
Sure.
And that's what we're working on now, mate. Just, it's going to take a little bit of time and you know, it's going to take some hard work to get it all into shape. But, I'm pretty confident that we'll get there.
Cool. The Moriwaki chassis is a beautiful piece of kit, isn't it?
Oh yeah, look, it's especially this year's one too. 2012 model is different again, and you know, I think I'm really happy to be working with Moriwaki because, you know, they're really, really keen to get back, you know, get back to the top of the Moto2 category. You know, it wasn't long ago that, you know, you can't forget in 2010, you know, Tony Elias won the championship with a Moriwaki chassis, and you know, in the past, you know, 12 months, everyone sort of steered towards Kalex and the Sudas and, you know, FTRs and what have you, and you know, Moriwaki are really keen to get more of that share, you know, of the grid.
Sure.
On Moriwaki chassis, and I think it's great because, you know, they're really motivated to improve the bike, and you know, and they're open for input, and I think that's a bit of my job there, to be honest. You know, I've worked for Kalex as a development rider and worked for Suda in the past as well, and you know, I've learnt a thing or two in my time there, and I'd like to be able to try and help Moriwaki with their chassis. So hopefully, you know, hopefully we'll be able to help each other and both achieve good results.
Sure. Well, and to be fair, Moriwaki is a long-time legend in the motorcycle chassis industry. They have put out some historic bikes that have kicked ass all over the planet. Yeah.
Look, I've actually known Moriwaki for a long time. In fact, my first trip overseas was when I was 15, actually, or 15 or 16, and was for the Moriwaki 80cc Cup in Japan. And you know, the top guys from Australia, well, from all over the place, got to go to Japan for a big final race over there, and that's what I started road racing on, was a Moriwaki 80cc bike, you know?
Nice, yep.
And so I actually met, I met Midori and Mamoru and the whole family and everything. We got really close in that time, and it's funny how the world works, you know. I've been racing all over the place and have done lots of things in the time since, and, you know, here we are, you know, 13 years later, and we're working together again.
Yeah, that's very cool. That's very cool. You know, when you establish a relationship with a manufacturer and they know of you and they know of your racing, not only prowess, but sort of mental attitude, usually those things can carry through. Yeah.
Yeah, look, I'm really looking forward to it, mate.
Cool. So, we're not far away at this point. Well, frankly, right now I'm all abuzz because we've got World Superbike at PI this weekend, and I'm pretty stoked about that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I know it's time. The first corner, Qatar. That's going to be a bit of a thrill, isn't it, my brother?
Oh yeah, look, it's yeah. When you speak to anybody, when you mention, you know, Moto2, I mean, everyone gets excited straight away because it really has, you know, whether you like it or not, the way, you know, Dorna have gone with that series, I mean, you can't deny how exciting it is to watch and how, you know, close the racing is and what a spectacle it's become. You know, I mean, I know myself, a lot of times last year, I had more fun watching the Moto2 race on TV than I did the MotoGP race, you know, and you know, it's still obviously everybody's goal and, you know, everyone's dream is to compete in MotoGP. And it was for me when I got that opportunity, well, those opportunities last year to fill in MotoGP, it was just, you know, astounding. It was a dream come true. But Moto2 class is definitely, you know, an exciting, you know, category. And to be a part of it full time this year, is, you know, I'm excited about it. And, you know, I just hope that we can achieve what we set out to and you know, show steady progress during the year and, you know, hopefully by the end of the season we've got something to be, you know, proud of.
Right. At the recent tests, you guys were not running the full Moto2 motor at that point, were you? Were you just running a stock motor or a super sport type motor?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a bit hard, to be honest, to read a lot into the lap times and, you know, to a lot of the gossip that was going around at the first two tests. I mean,
sure.
The reality is there were no transponders on any of the bikes and, you know, all the lap times that were published were, you know, basically submitted by teams or riders themselves. I mean, I had guys come up to me and ask me, what lap time did you do today? You know, and you only got to go to a local track day to see how... how distorted some of the stories you get there will be, you know. And so it was, you know, I think I definitely saw there was a lot of guys going really fast and but I also saw a lot of, you know, fast engines in that too. And in our case, our team went there with stock CBR 600 motors, you know, just to establish a base with the bike and you know, I guess a starting point, you know, and that put us really behind the eight ball too in that area, to be honest, because even when you do get the Moto2 spec engine and it's got a little bit more horsepower, it will, you know, react, the bike will react differently to that, you know. So
sure.
At the next test, hopefully we're going to have a higher grade engine and then by the final test, like the next IRTA test, which is in, I think, the middle of March in Jerez, that one will be, I guess, a real, you know, better indication as to where we stand and where everyone stands, really, because that's where we'll use the official engines and there'll also be, you know, transponders on the bike, you know, official timing. So, you know, as they say, bullshit stops when the gate drops, mate, you know.
Exactly.
I think we'll see where we stand then, you know.
Well, I've always kind of said that people should not take a lot of stock in preseason testing until we get very, very close to the lights going out.
Yeah. I mean, in our case too, I mean, what I'm more trying to do at the moment too is trying to get comfortable on the bike, you know, and to do that sometimes, you know, I've learned as a development rider, sometimes you need to actually, you know, ride the bike, you know, with a little bit up your sleeve so you can focus on the improvements being made and adjusted and so on. And you know, we've just got to get a good base going at the moment before I go sticking my neck out. And then once that's all, you know, good and I feel confident and comfortable on the bike, then we'll start to push a bit harder, you know.
Cool. I was talking a couple of weeks ago. We'd get a long call with Colin Edwards, and obviously we were chatting about his Suter BMW CRT bike, and
yeah. Yep.
And I asked him, I said, did you talk to Damo? And he said, no, I kind of wanted to get on it with no previous feedback. Yeah. I thought that was kind of a cool answer.
Yeah, well, it is, because I'm exactly the same, you know. I mean, when we started in Valencia, you know, okay, I hadn't ridden the bike at all before, so, you know, I guess the best place to start is from somebody who was successful with it before, you know, and
yep.
So that's a good place to start. It's a better place to start than any, I guess, you know, and so we started with those sort of settings, but immediately to me, it wasn't going to work for me, you know, and so rather than, you know, try to, you know, get too deep and too, you can get confused, you know. I like to go with my own instincts, my own feelings of the bike, you know, and I like to sort of work with things in priority, you know, and I just sort of prioritize what things are holding me back the most and work on them in that order, you know. And, you know, we just sort of got stuck into it in that with that approach, you know, but I think we still need to, I think, you know, find a way of working together where I work well with my guys and they understand how I work, and you know, we've still got to set that sort of system up yet, you know. We're still sort of refining that, I guess, you know.
Right.
And I think once that's happening and once we've got a good connection there, I think, you know, I think we'll be able to make bigger steps and have a better way of working, you know, because often, sometimes it's like, you know, too many cooks spoil the broth, you know, and if you get too many opinions flying around the garage at once, it can be chaos, you know.
Sure.
So I think that's part of our next thing to work on at the next test, is just to try and get a system where we're all pulling together, you know, and if we can do that, I think, you know, because I personally think the team has a lot of potential, you know. It's got great people there. It's got, you know, it's got motivated people behind it, you know, and mm-hmm. They've got the budget, they've got material. It's just you know, all the ingredients are there, you know. It's just a case of putting it all together. You know?
Right. You got to make the right pie. You are doing something that is very cool, and I haven't seen any other rider do this. And it's your convict club deal, where like people can actually come to the races, attend, yeah. You know, basically get the full high dollar VIP treatment, hang out in the paddock. I think that is badass. I think that's a great idea. I'm surprised more people aren't doing it.
I'm glad you brought it up, mate, because I was going to plug that myself somehow. I was just waiting for the right time to drop it in there. So that was good. Good that you brought it up. But it's something we tried to do. It's just a bit different than everybody else, you know. Like, obviously, I've been in Europe for a while now, and you know, Aussies have got a good reputation over here. We're a bit different to everybody else, you know, sort of thing, you know, in Europe, that is. And but at the same time, you know, you're always seeing a kangaroo or a koala mascot or something, and we, you know, we sort of like, well, we need to do something different, you know. And we were driving in the car one day, you know, on the road home from a race, and my wife actually came up with the idea. She said, oh, look, you know, why don't we go with the convict thing, you know, and some of my, you know, history, you know, family tree. My mum's done family tree and stuff, and we found, you know, actually convicts in our family tree and all that stuff, and I thought, well, that'd be good, you know. So, yeah, we went with that sort of idea to start with, and then we set up the convict club, you know, and it just, what it is, it's just a way of people to support and join up. And there's, you know, there's three different levels of membership and you know, and basically, you know, you can join, you're a part of what we do, you get all the info, you get all our newsletters, you get up to date with everything I'm doing, and you have your mugshot taken even, you know. Just like you would have been arrested, you get a mugshot taken, and you know, you go on our website, you go on a Facebook thing, and then you know, depending on what level you choose, you can even come to the racetrack, and you know, see what it's like from inside the box and, you know, shake hands with all the riders and, you know, the crew and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, it's something that's really taken off now, you know, and I think it's great, and, you know, every bit of support helps, and hopefully it'll keep growing this year.
I think it probably will. I definitely have to get one of your T-shirts. They're way cool.
That'll be good. I'll send one out, mate. No worries.
All right. Hey, I do have to ask you, since we are coming up here, and obviously Phillip Island is home, home area, if you will. You got any tips for this weekend? Anybody you think's going to be on top?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's going to be hard to, you know, I think bet against Checker and the Superbikes, because I know the Ducati works really good around that place, and, you know, he's a reigning champion, and I noticed even the extra 6 kilos, whatever they bunged on his bike, didn't slow him down much in the test, you know.
Nope.
So I reckon he's still got to go in as the one to beat, and I actually sort of thought that Eugene Laverty was going to be the one who'd give him the most trouble, but it sounds like he's going in there with some injuries as well.
Sure, broken
so,
hand.
And Hopkins, I was really excited to see, you know, how he'd fare at Phillip Island, and he's out as well. So yeah,
and Haslam as well.
Yeah, it's there's a few on the sick list, but I reckon Jack is going to be the guy to beat, and I reckon the dark horse would be Sykes, you know, because
okay.
he's been fast in all the testing this year, this pre-season, I've noticed. And I hope me mate, Josh Brooks, who's filling in for John Hopkins, I hope he does a good job there, because he knows Phillip Island like the back of his hand, and he's hungry to prove what he can do on the world stage. And I know that if he gets a good, you know, if he gets confident on that bike, he gets comfortable, he'll be hard to beat around there, mate. So he might you know, upset a few people, I reckon.
One way or another, right? I think somebody else may be in with a shot if he can overcome his end of race finishing, you know, consistency, would be Jakob Smerts too, because he's been real quick in testing as well.
He's going to be fast too. I've raced actually with his brother a lot in the last couple of years in IDM,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, they're both great guys, and Jakob seems to be a guy who can really, he's really, really super strong for you know, qualifying, like a single lap. Like, you know, if you put some new tyres underneath him, he really seems to be able to bang out a lap time. But it's, you know, it's a different case to try and do it over 30 laps, you know, and I think
right.
that's what him and his crew need to focus on the most, you know, get that consistency out of a race tyre. And if he can do that, then yeah, sure, he'll be strong, because you know, there's no question he's got the speed, you know. It's just a case of getting the consistency there, I think.
Exactly. You know, it's interesting. I was just having a conversation on Twitter, if you can actually consider that a conversation, but Ian Wheeler, automotive photo guys that are involved in the biz.
Yeah.
And my question was, should they potentially redesign the turn one gravel trap at Phillip Island? Because it seems like if you go off there, even if you go off upright, you're always going to have a big tumble, even if you straight line it.
It's a tricky situation, because I've spoken to a few people about it, you know, and in the past, years ago, the gravel traps there were hardly anything. I mean, you could
right.
You could just ride straight through it without a drama. And but that was actually one of the problems they had. I mean, they had an event there. I remember that it had been raining all morning, and then it dried out for the race. Like the actual surface of the track dried out, but the grass and everything else
mm-hmm.
was still wet, you know. And I remember it was Kevin Curtin and Daniel Stauffer came together in turn one, sort of locked handlebars and had to both go straight. And they, you know, they stood it up and went straight, but couldn't stop in the wet grass, you know,
mm.
and which is normally the best stuff to crash in, because you just slide along and everything's fine, you know, you don't get gripped and picked up and tumbling and all that sort of stuff. The bikes are normally pretty good to go too, but these guys were actually upright when they left the track. And basically, you know, they were going that fast. I mean, you're sort of tipping in there at probably 270, you know, kilometres an hour. And they were going straight ahead, and they were actually, you know, coming towards the exit of turn two when they noticed a massive, like a big jump, like it was a hill, basically to prevent, like, cars and stuff driving all the way over to exit of turn two.
Right.
You know, I remember, you know, they both were heading at it at the same time, and Daniel, I think Daniel stayed on the bike and decided to ride it out, hit the jump and, you know, like, hope for the best, and Kev jumped off before it, you know, and both of them ended up really badly hurt, and I know it was a big, big crash, and so I think they tried to do something to slow everybody down, and also the cars had a few bad accidents as well, and with those gravel tracks for the cars, you know, they just stop them, you know, they go into that dirt there, and they, you know, the cars generally stay, you know, on four wheels, and sure, they pull up, and everything's fine, you know, but on a motorcycle, it's not so, it's not really like that, you know, and can cause a lot of damage, so I guess, caught between a rock and a hard place there. I used to like it the way it was before when you just fell off and slid along on grass, you know, but unfortunately it's really thick gravel now, you know.
And well,
can cause some dramas.
And the way that they furrow it to slow guys down may actually exacerbate some of the tumbling that goes on. But, you know, still, PI has got to be one of the best circuits in the world. I'm sure it's one of your favorites.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, if you talk to, you know, I'd say 90% of riders will say the same thing. It's just a special place. It's got, you know, it's got a bit of everything, really. It's really fast, really wide. You know, you got some slow corners, you got some blind corners, and it's just got a real good flow to it, you know. It's just, people in Phillip Island probably don't like me saying this. It's just a shame it's in Phillip Island because, you know, the weather there can be so... just so unpredictable, you know. It's you never sort of have, well, very rarely have a full weekend where it's the same conditions, you know.
Right.
And I guess that can make it exciting for the, you know, for the viewers and but for the people working there and racing there, it can be a bloody nightmare, mate. You know.
Yeah. Total pain in the ass.
Yeah. If the place was in Queensland or something, it'd be unreal.
Well, not to mention the animal life there. That creates its own issues as well.
Yeah, I mean, you've got everything to deal with. You know, if you're not dodging hailstones, you know, at lunchtime, then you could be dodging seagulls and that, you know. so it's a bit of everything. But I guess that's what makes that, you know, it's a special place, I guess. You know, you're against all of it there, you know. If you come in on top, that's probably what makes it feel good.
Yep, very unique. What tracks are you looking at this year? I'm assuming there's a few tracks that you haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I don't know, probably about 50%, I suppose. I mean, I have been to a few of them. I've been to, you know, Jerez and Valencia, and a lot of the European ones I've been to now, you know.
Yeah.
But then there's quite a few that I haven't been to as well, you know, Mugello and Misano and Silverstone and you know, places and all the flyaway ones like Sepang and Indy. Actually, I never was in Indy as well.
Yep.
So I've got, there's definitely a lot of quite technical tracks to learn. And unfortunately for me too, this year they've changed the rule where we could, you know, actually go testing there before or something like that. But now that the teams aren't allowed to actually test at a circuit where we race at. So that prevents me from testing there before the event, you know. So a lot of them I'll be having to learn the place on the Friday.
I see some Xbox in your future.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'll definitely be doing that. And, you know, and even if I can sneak out onto a street bike at certain racetracks too, you know, that'll be a bonus just so I can find, you know, which way the place goes, you know.
Yep.
And because you're allowed to do it on other bikes and stuff, but not on your Moto2 bike, you know. So, yeah, I might be taking or you know, begging somebody to do some laps on their road bike at some point.
I'll see if I can drop me an email, and I know plenty of people in that area that have super sports.
I might do that to organize something. Yeah, before Indy, even Indy might be, you know, might help me a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing you there. Listen, I don't want to take up too much of your time. I know that you are busy getting things wrapped up and getting prepared for the season. Sure. And I do thank you for taking the time to talk with us, and I will include a link to the Convict Club within our show notes. And I wish you the best of luck, sir.
Thanks a lot, mate. Yeah, look, I appreciate all the support that I've had, and you know, regardless of what happens this year, you know, just to be on the Moto2 grid for a guy like me, you know, it's just such an amazing thing, and you know, I couldn't do it without the people who are supporting me and who are behind me, you know, for this. So I'd just like to, you know, thank everyone, and hope I can, you know, do you all proud.
Cool. Well, have fun at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'll try, mate.
All right, brother. You take care, and we will talk to you soon. Best of luck at the next test, and even best of luck at Qatar, and maybe we'll meet up and talk face-to-face at Indy, sir.
No worries. All right, thanks for having me on the show.
All right, cheers, mate.
Cheers, mate. See ya.
All right, cool. See ya. All right, I'm here, man. What's going on?
Cool. You know, it's amazing how many people come out for testing just to hang out.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, honestly, the crowd's not that big, but they pretty much kind of give them full access around here, so that's kind of cool. You know, they get up close and personal.
Yeah, it's pretty hardcore. They're the hardcore fans. Some of these folks come from overseas and from all around the world to see you guys do this. And yes, Sepang does actually give pretty full access.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what the company, I think it's called Pole Position or whatever, that kind of have a package, you know?
Yeah.
And I see them all the time, and I've done a couple of things for them at the races, and I was surprised to see them here. Hell, I think they had 12 or 13 people here on a package deal just to come see the test. So that's kind of crazy. Oh, wait a minute. I'll turn this volume down a little bit. I just add character to the interview. Go ahead. What's up?
So what are we talking temperature-wise there now? 85, 90?
Well, how about hot as fuck? Yeah, it's hot, man. You know, middle of the day today, I don't know how hot it was, but I had some Fremunda cheese work, and it was hot as hell.
Okay, and so let's get down to brass tacks, dude. Electronics, you've been battling those for the last 3 days, and granted, you've been kind of fucked with the weather, and you haven't had a chance in the afternoons until today to get things going, but you managed to snap in a pretty good lap time in the afternoon. Are you just like cheesing on the electronics? Is it driving you nuts?
You know what? Right after lunch, honestly, we've been chasing something, and what we've been chasing is throttle connection. And, you know, if you want to ride one of these bikes at 10 tenths, you have to have full control. And, you know, that's involving every input you put into the bike, rear brake, front brake, throttle, you know, deceleration, everything. You have to have full control of what's going on. And what we had was, you know, I'd open the throttle and nothing would happen. And then when it did happen, it was 10 times more than I wanted. It was just a big bop, you know, it was hit real hard.
Yep.
I came in, I was like, you know, you can't, I don't care who you are, you can't ride a motorcycle at 10 tenths if you're trying to put inputs in and nothing's happening. And then when it does happen, it's not what you want. So we really battled that a lot last couple of days and trying to come up with solutions and playing around. You know, a lot of it is you have to understand, you know, hell, I've got, I think, 20 years experience or 21 doing this shit. Whenever you have four butterflies opening and injecting fuel all at the same time, it's a little bit hard to manage as far as trying to be smooth.
Right.
And so we got a different, you know, a new throttle body that you can kind of play with. let's say. I don't want to give you too much, but we can play a little bit. I'm not trying to be funny, but
it
came down to that. After lunch, I said, let's go home. Tired. I'm frustrated. Y'all are frustrated. Let's pack our shit and let's go home. And, I went and looked at the computer and sat down with the guys, and I said, you know why? I know what we did y'all on. We did this. You know, we worked bees, and we did that, and we did this. And kind of my idea, I can't do it on a computer. They have to do it because I don't know what numbers to type in to make it happen.
Right.
And they did it, and next thing you know, we dropped 2 seconds. So just getting that throttle connection and getting that input how you want it, it's amazing what kind of difference it makes.
I remember an interview that you did about a month ago, and you said that the best that you were getting out of it was riding at about 65%. So if you had to look at today and you made that change, what percentage would you give it?
Yeah, the bike is a package. I think we're at 83, 84 now.
Okay.
We have a major limitation with chassis at the moment. They actually made a new chassis from the last test to this one.
Yeah.
A little bit weaker, but I don't think it's enough. I think it's a step in the right direction. I think we need to play around a little bit with torsion and yaw and kind of come up with a solution to get rid of this chatter, because I just can't. It's what I call digging it in. You know, after you've done most of your braking and you go to kind of dig it in to turn the thing, if I'm too aggressive, it'll start to chatter.
Are you talking front end chatter or rear end?
Yeah, front end.
Okay.
But you know, all this is coming from the rear. I mean, we've got a softer construction rear compared to last year, and the rear is more or less, you know, contact patch is bigger and it's pushing the front. But that's not Bridgestone's problem. That's our problem. We got to figure out how to make it work. And talking about Jerez's first test I went on with the 2011 tires, we didn't have a whole lot of chatter. It felt stiff. I told him in the beginning, the chassis feels stiff. But now we know it is. It's too stiff. We need to back it down a little bit.
The swing arm, you think, or just in general?
No, you know, swing arm, I would say, swing arm pivot back, we're golden. We're really good. I mean, that bike has incredible feel, good stuff. We got a really high engine mount on that BMW engine.
Yeah.
And that transfers into, when you got a high engine mount, you got a lot less, let's say, aluminum travel through to get to the head pipe. So working on chassis stiffness with the engine being a main member, you know, once you have a high engine mount, it creates problems. So we're trying to figure out ways of playing with that.
So power-wise, how is the BMW power plant?
It's not bad. I mean, It's not a prototype. It doesn't have. I'm not doing 320K down the front straight like some of the guys. But it's got grunt, man. I mean, it's not to be Debbie Downer. It's not the most rideable engine, the most friendly. Right. An inline four is typically a bit of a handful.
Yeah. Sure.
But it's got tons of power. It's got tons of power for sure.
Cool. And so plans from here on out, they're taking it back to the factory with your input, and you're going to need a new chassis, hopefully, for Jerez?
Yeah, that's the plan. We got a few weeks to kind of for them to look at all the info and all the information that we got from this test. From what we had, the amount of chatter we had, to what we have now, we've cut in half. So we need to, we've more or less just raised the ceiling. I can push harder, but we still have the same chatter in the same places, but I can push harder and I can ride faster. So we need to figure out what we did and kind of do that again. And I think it's another couple tricks up our sleeve, but I think we have a good direction anyways.
Cool. Well, I mean, you know, a 20% jump or 19 or whatever is great. So I have to ask you, completely out of the ballpark, Casey Stoner joined Twitter, and both of you and Ben jumped all over his shit.
Yeah, well, you know, I know what a good guy Casey is, yeah. You know, and so does Ben, you know, and I mean, we laugh and joke and carry on, and I think, obviously, you know, I would compare Casey kind of to Eddie Lawson. You know, Eddie didn't like a lot of the public eye. He was, some people thought he was kind of an asshole because he didn't talk to the press or whatever. But Eddie Lawson's a great guy. I mean,
super absolutely.
Cool, love him to death. And same as Casey. But Twitter, I think, is kind of a standoffish way to banter and play and kind of show a little bit of your personality without a camera sticking in your face. So it and you know me, I just, you know, I'll take it to the next level and see where we go with it. So
I think Ben is the same way, but you have to be astounded at the amount of feedback you get back.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, on Twitter, you know, I've been on Twitter, I guess, for a year and a half now, and never really, I don't know, I've just never really paid much attention to it or spent that much time with it. But looking after the day of playing around and bantering back and forth, and I think I had 2,000 people follow me in a day, I was like, wow, well, obviously people are actually, you know, on Twitter and paying attention. So let's play with it and fart around.
Yeah, no, it's fun and funny. And frankly, for me, it's a great resource. All right, dude, I'm already over 10 minutes. I will let you go. Find yourself an air conditioned room and an ice cold beverage of your choice, which I'm assuming will be a beer, and have a safe and comfortable flight home.
You got it, man. I'm going back to the hotel, pack my shit, watch American Idol, and then I'm headed to the airport.
Cool. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry I called you in the middle of fucking testing. That was my bad.
No stress. Did that phone right. I thought, who in the fuck is calling me? I'm working, goddamn it. And then finally, after like the third, I denied it twice. And after the third time, I was like, okay, I got to find out who this is. I don't freaking know. So. stress, man. No worries.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were going to answer me on this one, but thank you for taking the call, and we will talk to you soon, mate.
You got it, man. Take it easy. Right. We'll see us.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen or gentleman, for bringing us back. And we don't know if it's going to work yet. It's the magic of time shifting. But definitely thanks to you, Damo, for taking the time out. He was in Germany. And thank you, mystery guest, for joining us. And he is in mystery land. you gotta love it, don't you? What else should we talk about, Jules?
The test, as always, you know, we gotta be taken with a grain of salt because every team is working on different stuff.
But on top of that, they got the shit rained out of them.
They did today, yeah.
Yeah.
But I did want to ask you what you thought, because I thought this was very strange. So Pedrosa's engine blew up yesterday, and all the Hondas were immediately taken off the track.
Yeah,
which I thought was really interesting, because that must have been a failure where like it was possible that the entire batch was bad.
Well, here and here's what they did: they took that engine, they flew it back to Japan,
right,
and they tore it apart. And looked it over crazily, and I'm surprised they didn't have the capability to do that at the track. They took it back to the factory, which is nuts and expensive, right?
Yeah,
and tore it apart in the space of overnight, and said, "Okay, we figured it out. Here was the problem, and we're not going to tell you, of course, us,
right?
And you're good to go." So yeah, that is astounding that they parked it. But on the other hand, you know, the weather over there has been shit, and you know, the tropical rains that we usually have in the afternoon have been coming earlier, and so this this week really wasn't a great test for Sepang. Not no. like the stuff that they've usually had or sometimes had in the past. Mostly they basically just had the opportunity to run the mornings and that was it. And plus on top of that, apparently they ran some car races there a week or two ago and it dirtied the shit out of the track. So, I mean, the place was not in prime condition. Certainly not as good as Sepang round one, if you will.
Right. Although it sounds like towards the end of today they had good decent weather because the times definitely dropped into the range that we would expect.
Yeah. And there's also a bunch of private Moto 2 tests going on all across Europe. A bunch of teams have rented out various tracks all over the place. Not all of them Moto GP tracks, just guys getting out and trying to figure out what's going on. Iannone's out there. A whole bunch of guys are across Europe, you know, kind of sorting their bits out. So I don't know, it's kind of building. That's funny. I just got to chill because it's coming upon us, Jules. It's creeping up. And before we know it, you and I are going to be getting absolutely zero sleep.
Yeah. Well, we had racing this weekend at Superbike. So it's already started.
It has. And
it didn't disappoint either. Unfortunately, it did start with a tragedy.
Yep.
We lost a young rider named Oscar McIntyre on Saturday because it was before Super Bowl, right?
Yep, 600 Super Stock.
Yeah, and that was the Super Stock, not the World Super Stock. That was the Australian, the support right. class, one of the support classes. And obviously, terrible accident. I actually haven't heard exactly much about it, but it sounds like the kind of accident that you just can't avoid because the fallen rider gets hit by other riders, and this is the one thing that, you know, it's going to be very difficult to solve.
It was between turn two and turn three, and involved a couple of riders, and I haven't heard the whole story, and frankly, I don't need to, but. What's the word I'm looking for? A nod of affection and condolences for the family, for Oscar.
Fellow racers and, you know, everybody had to be there at the track when it happened, obviously. You know,
it certainly put a damper on things, but, that is, you know, that's the hardest part of our job here, Jules, is to...
Well, it's the hardest part for anybody who is into the sport. Whether you're a fan, you know, wannabe journo or racer, I mean, it's the same, right?
Yeah.
Especially if this kid, you know, he's 17 years old, you know, a very promising young rider. Seemed like a very interesting kid.
Yep.
I watched a little tribute in video that his friends made for him, and it was... What can you say? You know,
it's terrible. What can you say?
But what the effect that it did have on the weekend for the superbikes was that the qualifying pre-practice was the results from that were taken as the final grid. The Super Bowl wasn't run, so we ended up with an interesting grid. I mean, it's not exactly surprising, but yeah, we had Tom Sykes on pole position.
Who is in my fantasy league. Yeah. Thank you very much for the points, Tom.
And Max Biaggi in second, Carlos Checa in third, during practice, and QP, those two guys looked like the ones that were going to be the ones to beat, and they were on the front row, so that made things hard. Jakob Smirts, who never really is a surprise in qualifying, if he finishes that well in a race, that's a surprise. And then Guintoli, Kamir, Canepa was on the second row, which is nice to see, on Ducati. Yep. Johnny Ray, I don't think he was very happy with that position. I think he wanted to be closer up front. His practice times were really good. Maxime Berger, who's coming on strong, is having a very strong start on the Ducati. Michele Fabrizio on the BMW this year, on that really weird gold bike. I don't know what's it's just one bike. It's just him, right?
Yep, just him.
And then Laverty, who was still recovering from what, he broke his hand?
He broke his hand and
he had a concussion.
And he broke his heel.
Oh fuck! Really?
I didn't know about that. Wait! Leon Haslam.
Who's next? Yeah. So Leon Haslam is the guy who we didn't even expect to see on a bike, and he was out there.
Yeah, out there with a broken femur, a pinned broken femur. Are you kidding me?
It's insane. But yeah. You know, this is not the first time. I mean, remember last year he rode with like a really messed up wrist for.
Yeah,
4 or 5 races.
Those of you that don't know, through the Facebook page, I released before the weekend started a quick interview that I did with Leon right after he had that surgery done the day after. So maybe we should link to that. Let's make sure that we include that in the show notes, Joe.
Why don't we just run it right now?
You want to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's run it.
Go.
You know, I'll just start in. We don't even need a prelude. How are you doing? You had surgery, what, yesterday?
Yeah, surgery yesterday. I had 2 screws put in my tibia. That surgery went well. He was a little bit cautious about me going out today, but I managed to do 2 laps, which has qualified me on the grid. So, I'm quite positive around that. And I'm also going to get to go out tomorrow as well to try and improve on that and, get a little bit better feeling at the bike.
Leon, can I just tell you you're nuts and leave it at that? I mean,
yeah, well, it wasn't an ideal situation, but, the tibia, the operation went really well. Got 2 screws holding that together, so that's what's the support of the bone is stronger than it probably was before. I've got a slight crack in the heel and a crack in my left toe, but they're actually not affecting me at all, so that's pretty cool.
What kind of fracture was it?
Just a small fracture in the heel and the left toe, but the I broke the end of the tibia off and also fractured the tibia up the middle, which that's why they had to put 2 screws all the way through to catch both the cracks and also to pin it to the other side. So and that was why I had to have the operation, really.
Okay, so odds are you're going to have to deal with a little bit of that later because I would think, right?
Yeah, well, obviously I need the operation anyway. So, I've got over a month off after Australia. So, that's going to give me more time for it to heal up. For sure, I'm having x-rays after each night to make sure that it's obviously all in place and not moving. And after this weekend, we've got some time just to, to look after it properly and get it back to where it should be.
Cool. Yeah, I guess you get to chill out. I mean, we kind of get another winter break after the first race, right?
Yeah, we've got like a full month. We're supposed to be testing mid-March, but, other than that, we've got a full month before I'm racing again. So as long as I can, get out tomorrow and get a good feeling on the bike so I can move around, I'm pretty confident we can get in the points. And have 2 solid results here, then it's going to be a bit of a damage rehabilitation type of thing.
Sure. As long as you do get in the points. How's the team working out this year? How's your confidence level? What are you thinking you guys are going to be good to go this year?
Yeah, the team's made a big step forward. I've got my guys over from that I run with in 2010 with Suzuki. The team itself is actually running really strong. For sure, we've made improvements generally over the whole bike, electronics and chassis and stuff. So, we've got the same issues. We're still obviously catching up compared to the other guys, but, it's definitely a lot more stable package and we're making the right moves. So, from our point of view, it's all positive. We've got Marco Melandri as a teammate who's doing a little bit more complaining right now because obviously he jumped off the Yamaha. But, for me, that's quite positive as well to have him in the garage and pushing in the same direction as me. So, on the whole, it's all positive. Before my injury, obviously, I had a full winter at home, and it's kind of been the fittest and strongest that I've ever been. So, it's hopefully that'll drag me through this injury a little bit faster as well.
Yeah, well, and you certainly are not a man to be putting on your own sunscreen. I talked to Whittam the other day, and I know that you do some training with him, and he said that you were perhaps the most positive you've been going into a World Superbike season. And he said the team is actually wrapping itself around you instead of you having to adjust to the team.
Yeah, basically we put a team together that I know I've already worked with. The only negative of it is that they're all new guys controlling a new thing. So, you know, it's been a big learning curve for them. But, you know, as far as getting the most out of what we have under me on any given day, I'm really confident with the guys that I have this year. For sure we've got to still push on the development side to get a base package. But, as far as the working of the team and getting the most out of what we have, you know, we're definitely doing that. So, you know, that's all you can really ask for.
Awesome. So I take it you're heading out to dinner now.
Yeah, we're done for the day. Only done 3 laps today, so nothing too energetic. But just a bit more elevation, a bit more icing, and we'll see what tomorrow brings.
Pinos, or are you ordering in?
Ollie's actually cooking most nights. It keeps me in bed. So very chicken, I believe. So, yeah.
I haven't talked to you since you got married. Congratulations.
Yeah, got married, got a little girl. We had a little girl at Christmas as well. So, it's been an eventful winter. So, yeah, it's been all good.
They do say that's about a tenth a lap, right?
Yeah, I reckon it's made me quicker. So, that's a positive thing. I needed it to be.
All right, mate. I'll let you go. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I understand that you are in a world of hurt. And do well. And we are keeping our eyes on you from here over in the States and well beyond.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
All right. Cheers, mate.
All right. So that was fun to kind of just stick it in. I didn't expect to do that. So those of you that aren't on Facebook actually just got the opportunity to hear that. I should point out that occasionally I do that. I will drop little tidbits that are near live on the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/motopod. So if you hang out there, you'll get the opportunity sometimes to hear things. Surprise, here is something that I drop in your lap.
And by the way, for those people who don't want to be on Facebook, you actually don't have to have an account to be able to get to most of this stuff on the Motopod page. Like anything that Jim and I post or the Motopod page itself posts, which is Jim and I usually, is publicly available. So you just go to that address and grab the stuff. You don't have to sell your soul.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a very, very good point, because there are people that go, oh, fuck, I don't want to get on Facebook. No, which is probably the best of ideas.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. So anyway, we were kind of going through the grid. I was kind of bummed to see Aoyama struggling, but, we'll see. He could get up to speed. The racing, because I kind of want to fly through this.
Because
we've got a lot of interviews to play.
Got a ton.
But it was good racing. So race one, the big story there was that on lap, I'm going to say five.
Lap five.
Carlos Checa, I think, flew the fastest heist that I've seen in years, because it was in the final corner at turn 12, I believe, at Phillip Island, which is the
was
accelerating...
it turn 12? I thought it was turn 2.
Oh boy, I believe it was coming back onto the straight.
Okay, well, it's either turn 2 or turn 12,
both,
folks.
Both are super fast. Yeah, both are very fast, and he flew. And it looked like he landed just properly from as much as he can from a high side.
Yeah.
And it was amazing because he was totally unfazed. He was just kind of like afterwards like, yeah, that sucked.
Well, what he said, and it was very interesting, because we all know that the 1098 underneath him is very stable.
Mm-hmm.
And he's clearly a rider that rides so smoothly, and that's like the secret to his speed. And he said, I just gave it a little too much there. So it's interesting that there's...
That means that he has more left.
Exactly.
At all
that's
times.
That was my exact point, that there's still something left, which could make it very interesting, because obviously the Aprilia of Max Biaggi is on fire.
Oh my God,
And not in the cube sort of way. so if those two ever get into a, which we didn't see this weekend, which I'm kind of bummed about. They never got, I would love to see a la Imola 2002, those two guys getting into like a head to head elbow banging battle.
All race long battle. Yeah.
It would be
very interesting because they have totally different styles of riding and they're riding very different machines.
Yep.
And yet I could see it happening.
Well, I could too. You know? And so we've got kind of a precursor of things to come, you know, the Ducati, as we well know, being a twin, is a little bit slower in the straights, but just has so much torque coming out of the corners. The Aprilia just flies, and they've got, you know, the speeds that Biaggi was pulling, like 325 kilometers an hour down the front straight there.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, 201 miles an hour just for the translation here.
completely off the hook.
Yeah.
And
amazing.
But I mean, you know, there were the guys who were right behind, you know, Melandri was doing 322. I mean, you've got guys that are just hauling ass. Johnny Ray was doing 320. These are fast motorcycles, and it's just nuts. It's completely nuts. And when we start getting to the tracks that aren't like PI, and you get riders bunched up, well, I mean, you know, Imola, Jules, which is, you know, not one of your favorite tracks.
No, Mons is the one I don't like.
Oh, Mons is the one you don't like. You hate Mons, don't you?
With a passion.
As we start to bunch these guys up, it should be fun. I'm pumped to see it. Results of race one. Want me to run down through the top 10? Because there's some interesting folks in there.
I do want to give, like, the biggest freaking props to Melandri in race one, because I think he was somewhere like 11th at one point, and he just started cutting through the field. And on his first time out on the BMW in anger, he scored the best result for BMW ever. I mean, since they came back with the S1000R anyway.
Perhaps he was encouraged by his absolutely gorgeous girlfriend.
Well, then, you know, how come that didn't work before?
Well, apparently he did not have the proper encouragement.
Anyway, a lot of the writers are talking about the BMW this year, the S1000RR, being very much a contender because, you know, obviously we know that the mechanically and even with the their own electronics, it's been coming on very strong. They had some issues with tire wear. That was definitely not the issue this time around. I don't know if you saw the little pan of the camera that they did on the tires at the end. This is the first time I've seen the BMW tires look just like the Aprilia and the Ducati of Guintoli, who was third, which should be scary for some people because we know that the BMW is a freaking amazing fast machine, and the only thing that was really keeping them from winning races was that it was wearing tires normally fast.
Well, and secondarily, they have been experimenting with electronics, theirs and others, outside of their own shop.
That's right.
in another time shifting, that's something I'm going to have an answer to that might have already been answered. How bizarre is that? for Sylvain, Ginter's dude on the box, great for a satellite team. I mean, look at what we got, Jules, on the box. You know, Biaggi, Melandri, Guintoli. Biaggi, clearly a factory team.
Yep.
Melandri, a factory team. Guintoli, a not completely non-factory team. And actually, if I remember correctly, they're still using the bikes they were using 2 years ago for Effenberg. And then Tom Sykes in fourth on Akawi. I mean,
who was actually quite. I mean, he was on the pointy end for most of the race. He was only towards the end of that he got
dropped off. Yeah.
And it wasn't for lack of trying, that's for sure.
No. And he and Guintoli and Marco had like a brilliant battle.
Absolutely.
It was clear that Max like dominated. He dominated. He did a stoner on him.
Well, it was Checa and him were going to do a Rossi stoner kind of Laguna Seca kind of thing where they're going to start lapping people. Actually, you know what? Towards the end of the race, it looked like Melandri was catching Biaggi.
He seemed he was, but he was pulling Ginter's along with him.
Yeah.
It was you know, add another 10 laps onto that and auxiliary gas tank, and it could have been a whole different race. Good stuff.
Good stuff.
Very, very fun to watch and a great opener for us. Eugene, it was sad, 3 laps in, took a tumble.
Yep.
And that was a bummer. We know
he actually got back up on the bike and because he was only 3 laps from the end.
Yeah, 3 laps from the end, and he. But then he parked it wisely.
Well, wait, hang on. I believe he crashed earlier. He got back on, did a couple of laps, and then came back in 3 laps from the end. That's right.
Good stuff, though.
Yeah.
Definitely fun to watch. I watched it on a postage stamp size screen. yet to watch it on the full screen, but definitely on the list of things to do.
I was pretty impressed with the speed coverage. There's a lot of ways to go to catch up with like the way the MotoGP does their stuff, but it's nice to see that. Well, you know, I shouldn't be praising speed because they still freaking squeeze the crap out of our racing with their, you know, I cut my chopper in half shows. Whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I get it. But you know what, Jules? Only like
Where's 30%. Bob? Where's Bob? We need Bob because I know he loves the speed so much. He would love to talk about it for about 30 minutes. So
30% of our audience is American, Jules, and the rest of them are overseas and they're going, what the fuck are you talking about? And you know, the folks overseas, you know, they had James or they had whoever in their home country. I think it was well covered, and I think the camera angles were great. So hats off to the crew that put that together. It was a brilliant production.
Yeah, and good onboard stuff too.
Yeah. And remember what we didn't have onboard? It was only a couple of years ago for World Superbike.
Yeah.
So the fact that they're doing it and doing it well now, and that quickly, props. In front, I salute you.
Cool. All right.
Cool.
Race 2. Yeah.
Or should we just dive into interviews before we do race 2?
Okay, sounds good.
So this is going to just be an amalgam of interviews. Phil Hall, halfofmylife.com, he was our correspondent down there. We sent him down with a full press pass, and he got all the goodies. And we're going to throw a bunch of these at you guys this week. But the thing is, we've got a ton of them. So we're going to throw some of them at you next week. So this is a big mess of interviews. You can look at them and see who's going to be in them in the show notes, and we'll delineate where those folks' interviews start. So welcome to our madness.
All right, well, this is Phil Hall again, reporting for motopod.com from the World Superbike Championships at Phillip Island. It's Sunday morning, and the serious stuff starts today. Not that they haven't been serious up until now. But along with the interviews with the riders, it's been great to get together with some of the people behind the scenes, and a real privilege to speak to Ronald Tencarter, the head of the Tencarter team, and a man who everybody knows his name, and knows what he's done, but don't get to hear from him very often. So, Ronald, thank you very much for sparing us the time. Really appreciate that. You must be really happy with the way that the team is going today.
In the winter time, we have been hiding a little bit from the other teams. We went to a private test at Qatar in November. Then, begin of January, immediately after the testing ban period, we came to Phillip Island to test the 2012 machinery. So we have been a lot on track, but not together with the competition. So it meant it was the first time here that we were mingling with them. And fortunately, everything we worked on in the winter is working well, because we are very competitive on the moment. Obviously, with Brock Parks leading the Supersport boys, that is a bit of a surprise, because we didn't do any testing with them. But with Johnny, we are on par, and we expect some solid results in for today.
Mm. Well, of course, Brock does have a local advantage, doesn't he?
Yeah, he knows his way around Phillip Island, and I think for most Australian riders, when they're at their home soil, it's giving them always something extra special. I don't know what brings it all out. Yeah, but he's going really well around here, and he's adapting well to the machinery and gelling in with the team. It looks like we've already been together for half a season or so, because it's all just clicking. It all works.
And of course, Ronald, you've had some good Australians in your team before, haven't you?
Yeah, we have a bit of a reputation. I think at a certain point we even had three Australians in our team. Back in the days of Chris from Mulan on Superbike, and Muggeridge, Carl Muggeridge and Brock Parks on Supersport in those days. I think it was 2004 when we had that setup. So it was an all-Aussie squad.
And you've also had Andrew Pitt in your squad.
And Andrew Pitt has been with us. That was back. He's been 2 years with us. 2000. Wow.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't have put you on the spot.
I think that was 2009 and 2010. No, 2008 and 2009, actually, yeah. He was with us when he grabbed the title in 2008 with us. So,
yeah
there's a bit of an history between us and Australians. I don't know why that exactly is, but it seems that the nature of the riders and how they go about racing it comes just very close to how we go about with things. Essentially, just always feet on the ground, taking things step by step. And wanting to win every time we are out there, not being here just to be here, but being here to win.
Ronald, can you just quickly summarise the success that you've had with your team? Because particularly some of our American constituency mightn't be quite so familiar. You've won so many world titles in your team, haven't you?
Yeah, we won 8 World Supersport titles and 1 World Superbike. The most successful year was back in 2007 when we grabbed both titles in one season. James Toseland on World Superbike, and in the same season, Kenan Sovoglu grabbing the World Supersport spot. So yeah, it's been pretty good. We've always been front runners since we started in World Superbike. I think we've always been top 5 in the final results of the championship, with a couple of second positions in there. I think we finished 2 times on second position in the time we've been racing, and like I say, all the time we've been a top 5 runner anyway. So we've had our ups and downs,
but last more year, ups than downs.
Yeah, well, last year was one of the worst years ever, but this year in winter we already started end of last year to push really hard to make the bike a lot better. Then obviously with the new machine coming, 2012 bike, there's a lot of focus to really get things done this year. And we made another step. So this year, we want to be fully up there again. Of course, everybody wants to be a world champion at the beginning of a season. So that is where everybody is aiming at. But realistically, I honestly believe that there is only like 3 or 4 guys who are in for that title chase.
Cream rises to the top.
Yeah, and for sure, Jonathan is one of them.
Yes, definitely. Ronald, it would be fair to say, I think, and I said to you off microphone, that you don't actually seek out the limelight very much. You very much prefer to stay in the background, but we do see you in the television broadcasts and in the background somewhere, usually smiling, because you've usually got plenty of reason to smile. That's the way that you like to do it. You like to get the business done at the behind the closed doors.
Yeah, I know that we are in a sport where there's a lot of glitter and glamour around, but honestly, I'm not looking for that. That's not the reason for me being here. It's not a bit about camera time or having my face in the magazines around the world. It's more about getting the job done, having a team which is working in the best way, having results from the riders, and then my face will appear by itself every here and there. But I'm not searching for that kind of thing. I'm not here to polish my ego. I'm here to polish as many trophies as we can.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That line will be remembered. That line will be remembered. No, look, and I said that because I really appreciate the way that you go about doing what you do, because, you know, it's not all glitz and glamour. Mm-hmm. It's serious, head-down focus on what you're doing, and the results that you get show the result of that.
Yeah, I mean, basically the approach of racing must be that every time you go out there, you must improve yourself. And if you lose that by just starting to get drafted away into too much PR stuff of things, or like I said, just thinking your ego is more important than the team. There is a saying, there is no I in team, but that really is what it is.
So true.
I'm still the same person as what I was when we started up racing back in 94. With the same approach of thing, of course, my job has changed because the team has grown, has gone bigger, more official status. So my job is more and more behind the computer, organizing stuff and making sure everything gets done. But we still have the same approach. Friends of mine who have known me from that time really understand that I haven't changed. Some people think that I'm an unapproachable guy, but I'm not.
Well, you've proved that today for me, certainly. Well, I'm just so grateful for the time. What sort of a boss would you say that you were?
I think I'm more like a... I would call it more like a people manager, just trying to get things done, shaping up a team. For sure, I'm not always an easy guy. Because we're just trying to be friends with everybody. That's not getting things done. But just trying to organize things in as smooth a way as possible, with addressing problems quite immediate, without letting them go too much. And just trying to build an atmosphere in which everybody can excel from itself. And just trying to connect, because there's now so many disciplines within a team, because the electronics are playing a bigger and bigger part of it. So it's just, you got your suspension chassis guy, you got your crew chief, then you got the mechanics of it, then you got the electronics guy,
and your tire people,
and your tire guys, and you must make sure that all of those, which could be islands, that they don't become islands by itself, but that they are still united by bridges.
Yes.
So that there is a constant flow of information going around, and we don't miss out on anything.
Yeah, and that makes perfect sense, because that's the way a team should work.
Yep.
And you know, it's a measure of the respect that your team's held in. If you look at the riders who've ridden for you, you've constantly and consistently hired and run the best riders in the world.
Yes, we believe so.
Well, the results prove that.
Yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you about, how do you feel about the impact of the single bike rule?
The single bike rule, we have unfortunately been the first team to test it out, because I think Jonathan was the first one who came off during a session. So we had to rebuild a bike during a session. So it just means preparation of things. So instead of just having single parts with you, you need to build sub-assemblies, as we call them.
Yes.
So,
like endurance racing.
Yeah, if you have clip-on, in the past you would have the clip-on, you would have your clutch lever, you would have your buttons for the electronics on it, and then you would put that all together just after a crash and just see what was needed. But now you just, if the clip-on is damaged or bent, you just rip it off completely and get the new sub-assembly on.
That's got all of that stuff already
all
attached.
That stuff already on, and just so you can just basically like plug and play. So it just requires a bit of a different approach on things. In general, what the rule has been made for is not to complicate life for the teams, we must remember, because a lot of public, some of the teams and journalists are looking for, but it's getting so complicated of things, we must see it in the bigger scheme of things. Well, we are trying to have a series with a lot of bikes on the grid. Then for the manufactured back teams, it's going to be not so difficult to have two fully equipped machines out there for the rider, but to make sure that no teams are leaving this paddock.
Mm-hmm.
And even
because
we
they
have,
feel disadvantaged.
Yeah, and we even have more teams coming to this paddock. We need just to lower the budgets. And I think for a small team, it is really a big cost save. For the bigger teams, it doesn't affect so much the budget, because still we have a full rolling chassis with us, as we can see here behind me. It's basically just two full machines as what we are running in the main garage. And then we still have all the sub-assemblies with us,
yes.
So it doesn't change so much for us, apart from mileage on the bike, which is a cost saving by itself. But for any smaller team or a team who wishes to come in this paddock, for sure, it makes life easier.
Ronald, they're starting to start up outside, which means that we're going to lose the nice quiet that we've had. I want to thank you on behalf of Motopod for sparing us the time. I know you're a very busy man, and it's been a real privilege to talk to you and put something that adds to the face that we see on television. And I fully expected a really incisive, very clear statement of what you're up to, and that's exactly what you gave me. So I'm really grateful. Thank you so much, and I wish you all the best today. I've got to say, go Brock, because he's an Aussie. And you know, I saw his first ever road race meeting in 1997. I actually commentated the first meeting ever where Brock raced, so I followed his career all the way through. So I'm so excited to see him on pole, and I hope the team does well this weekend. And you know, if they do, it'll be a lot down to you.
We will give it all we have in us, and for sure on Brock's side, there's it's a very special day for him. Last year he was thinking that he would maybe have to stop bike racing at World Championship level to move to a domestic championship. Ultimately, we got him the ride he is on now, and to be on pole is just a very big reward that he has waited so long for us. And hopefully we can top it off with a win for him.
Ronald Tencarter, thank you so much for your time. Greatly appreciated. Thank you. All right, well, it's Phil Hall again reporting for Motopod.com here at Phillip Island for the World Superbike Championships. It's late on Saturday afternoon, which has been a pretty hectic afternoon, actually. And I'm hugely privileged to be able to speak to the current World Superbike champion, Carlos Checa. Carlos, welcome to Australia again.
Thank you.
And congratulations on how it's gone so far. How do you think it's going to go tomorrow?
Well, for sure last year was a fantastic year, amazing for me in different, for many reasons, and unforgettable. But now already are in a new year, no? And the year is still nothing win, nothing down. Tomorrow we start the first race, where I believe we have some chance. We have some chance. I see Biaggi also strong. Other riders seems like struggling a little bit to be in our pace. And we'll see. No, it's quite hot conditions. I think we never race with this temperature here. Fortunately, Pirelli bring different tires that. More constant, and I think we can finish the race in a better condition. But yeah, I feel quite confident. No, we start in the first road. We need to do a good start, try to be with the top guys, and then try to get our pace. And we know our pace is a pace for to fight for winning. No, I don't know how will be tomorrow, and the day, and the tires and conditions. But so far we did our job, and I feel we're ready for tomorrow.
There hasn't been any sort of panic in your pit. Everybody seems to have been going about their job very calm, focused.
Yeah, we have the experience from last year and previous year. Everyone know what need to do, what must to do, and everyone is concentrated in his own job, no? Myself as well. And it's what how we work last year, and we finally get a really good result. We did a really good races, and we don't need to change so much, no. Then keep doing the same. That sometimes is not easy, but and we believe that way to work will bring us sure again good results.
Carlos, how different is this year's bike from last year's bike?
Well, the bike is the same. Sponsors arrive, different sponsors, that is positive. But technically, we change the front suspension that we still we are understanding. So far now, we are, I think, already in a good level, quite confident on that front suspension. And for the rest, the bike, the engine is the same. Electronics, all as always, no? In different tracks, you adjust to adapt to as much as possible to that track and with the setting. And then we need to put our bike now is the, is 6 kilo more, no? It's more weight. Last year, especially Aprilia and other teams complained about the weight, the Ducati regulations. That seems like Ducati have some advantage. Okay, I think we five Ducati are on the track last year, and I think the second Ducati finished 9 in the championship. I don't want to say I am very good or our team or
you can. You're allowed to say that. You are allowed to say that.
But I mean, I think already we have a bike is 12 here in this track is 14 cases slower than the best bike is Biaggio and BMW. We are losing almost 2/10 on the straight. Plus now we even must put a 6 kilo. No, maybe they want to balance the championship, but I think for me personally it's not the way. I believe we can balance the championship race by race, putting weight and removing weight, depending on the results, like in America or the formulas.
Yes.
But I think here is a little bit penalizing the Ducati. But anyway, this is something is down, and we need to race with that, and we'll try our best during the year, and at the end of the year we'll see how is the situation. No, but unfortunately, I would like this is the reality. No, I would like to tell you, this year the bike is better in this. We change this, but basically. I think we lose some potential respect of last year for the weight.
Can I ask you, and you can tell me, you know, to mind my own business, where do they put that extra weight?
Yeah, basically, we put the engine brake starter, that is with the battery, this is about 3.5 kilo. It's quite concentrated, it's close to the engine. Then the exhaust is not anymore titanium, it's steel. Is also 1 kilo, is 4.5. Then not titanium anymore, about the screws. All the screws, we have maybe 0.5 kilo in titanium. The front fork is already 600 grams more heavy. And I don't know, the 400 grams extra, where maybe is 300 grams that they need to put, but they will play with the fuel. They basically, it's better to finish the race with 2 kilo, 1.5 kilo from fuel.
Yep.
That always is more safe than to finish with 0.5 kilo of fuel. No,
yes.
Sometimes in some areas, leaning the bike can happen that sometimes the fuel don't arrive correctly. No, to
yes.
the admission. But this is where we put the weight, and it's not in this moment. This is what we will race here for sure. It's not clear that in the future the weight will remain in these points.
Yes.
But
will
so far...
depend on the track.
Depend also the testing and what we consider, no? How the feeling of the bike. And if we think we need more weight on the back or we need more weight on the front, then maybe we'll play a little bit on that. But so far, I'm happy with this distribution.
I noticed this morning during the practice session you came in and the mechanics changed the spring in the left front fork. They left the right-hand one alone. The balance of the bike is that fine, that just one change to a spring can make a difference to the bike?
Yeah, of course. When you are racing on the limit and you are looking for a few tenths that can make the difference, is enough. The thing is, today... was quite warm, was quite hot, and in these conditions also we are using a big tire rear, the tire Pirelli Bring. And you know, the balance I was not so comfortable, because on the testing was not so bad, but the temperature was more down. And with these conditions, we planned yesterday night to test today the different settings on the spring. And finally we test, the soft spring was good for one area, the hard spring was good for another area. You don't know, you can never find the perfection, always is a compromise. But this gives some good information, and at an afternoon we start with a little bit different setting in front suspension that probably was the best compromise, and my pace and my lap time was good. I did the best lap time this afternoon in a hot condition. Second. But quite consistent, and then I was quite satisfied with the final balance.
Carlos, you've always said you love Phillip Island because it's an anti-clockwise track.
Yeah.
Is it also because it's such a fast track?
Yeah, it's fast. Ducati is good here. But also I did second position with Honda. I've been in the podium with Honda as well in the past. With Ducati MotoGP as well. Then I think with races in GP. But I like because it's very fast turns, but also very fluid. You need to keep rolling a lot, the bike.
Yeah.
Be smooth in fast area and then aggressive in the... in the breaking point, and as well as you said, no, is left a side where I feel more confidence.
Yeah, and
I like the view, of course.
Oh, sure.
The place. This one and Miller also is left, but is in the middle of the mountains with the snow in the top.
Oh yes,
it's really nice landscape, and here as well, no, with the sea. Then probably are the my favorite tracks. This one and Miller.
When you come over the top of the hill here and tip it into turn one, do you see the ocean or are you too busy watching the apex of the corner?
Normally when you are pushing very hard, you don't see the ocean. But sometimes when you are, going out of the track, sometimes you can look it, no? Sometimes you can look. And especially the pictures, when you see the pictures from a race or from practice, that someone gives to you is really nice, really nice background.
Carlos, how is the single bike rule going to affect your team this year? You don't have a backup bike now.
Yeah, for me it's a kind of decision that we need to consider at the end of the year. If for the teams and for the that I have my doubt if will be more cheaper. I have my doubt because you cannot pretend to come to Australia or go different races with only one bike. Nobody will go with one bike. Everybody have two bikes, everybody or more, because if some crash happen or some engine broke, you need to have at least spare bike or spare parts. This means that at the end we have the same mechanics as last year.
Mm-hmm.
We bring the same material, but physically we have only one bike in the pit garage. But this is my view, no? Of course, when you talking about one of these decisions, I don't know exactly all the reasons. Will be important to know all the different points. Different
cutting costs.
Yeah. To cutting costs, yes. This is clear, no? For me, the decision is they do that for cutting costs. But I have my doubt about if this decision reduce the cost.
Yeah, because the team brings another complete bike with them parts anyway, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. And we have the same people. We have the same parts, we have the same people. Only change in my side is that I don't have physically two bikes in the box, but I have one bike in the box and I have other bike behind.
Yep.
Without engine, but and many parts. Then,
it's silly, isn't it?
But this is my view, no? What I see.
Yeah.
To go deep in this decision, first we need to do one year.
Yep.
And evaluate this change at the end of the year. And second, also I would like to listen the organization, the teams, especially the team owners, and for sure they know. And they will know at the end of the year if it is more cheap or not.
Of course, because they're counting their cost all the time, and they will know how much it cost.
Yeah, but to cut the cost of this sport is, I think, other reasons. In other areas, to cut the cost with technology, with I think it's different ways to cut the cost. And my feeling can. But as I told you, no, I'm the rider, I'm not the manager, I'm not the owner of the team. It's difficult for me to say exactly if it's better for the cost to have one bike.
Where to now, Carlos? Obviously, you want to back up and win your second championship. How much longer do you want to race for?
Well, I have no idea. No plans. My plan is no plan for the future. It's just feel the moment, enjoy the time I'm passing. Use this opportunity and try to get from this opportunity of this year my best, do my best, and I think it's a great opportunity I have again. And from this, we'll see, no? At the end of the year, at the time, I need to decide, because we must decide. This time, at that time, I think I will feel something. I will feel something that indicate me what to do, no, in the future. Mm. In this moment, I have no plans, no emergency, no needs to program my future in more than 1 year. Yep. The good thing for me is just I look this year. I want to put my mind, my body, all my energy, full immersed in this project. And I have enough. I don't need to look further.
Well, it's my opinion, Carlos, that you have more than paid your dues, and the success that you're getting now, you thoroughly deserve.
Well, I think I arrived for me in the right moment. No, I think I have an up and down, and I think many years racing, and yeah, some kind of feeling like, okay, I meet many times there, but no, always close, but I never was able to find the perfect combination to be able to win a championship. But this moment arrived, no, and I'm very proud and very happy for that. Was really great to share with many, many people around. Everyone was really happy, and we did a fantastic season. But, you know, I think arrive at the moment should arrive. I was more prepared than ever. I had the good opportunity with this team, with this bike, and I was able to do it. No, then I'm really satisfied at this moment to take this opportunity and do the best, be able to do, to put out my best condition.
Carlos, traveling around the world, you know, we would look at that and say, wow, that's very exciting, but it has its downside too, doesn't it, in terms of your family and feeling like you belong in a certain place. You're always on a plane, always flying around. Do you enjoy that, or is that starting to get a bit tired?
Yeah, I enjoy because I like it. I like my job, I like this sport, and I'm really, and especially in this moment that we are fighting for winning, is really intense and really good. No, but for sure it's not the holidays. It's just different locations around the world where we race, but we do the same, no? We do the same in different tracks, different people, different atmospheres. That is good, of course. It's very good. And, of course, we also try to enjoy ourselves, no, in life. And, for example, when we are here in Australia or we go to America or next year we go to Russia, always we can put a few days after or before to visit or just relax, mm-hmm. or just have some time to look around or do some activities. I like to do activities, sport activities, and if I have chance and I am outside of Europe or around Europe, if there is the possibility, I do it, no? Then, of course, it's 100% focus in racing, and we only, when we are here, just thinking, okay, we need to stay 33, 35 hours in the plane, then we need to arrive there, adjust our bodies to the jet lag, the temperature, all that, and always thinking to be ready, no, to go on the bike. Never in my mind is, oh, I will do other activities or other things, no. Then, of course, after the race, some riders or sometimes you can spend time because you're already are outside. No, but normally nobody do.
Carlos, it's been a great pleasure to talk to you, and I'm really delighted that you've been able to spend the time with us. I know you're very busy and lots of people want a part of you and to talk to you, and you know, and I just appreciate that we've had the time to sit down and talk. It's been nice and quiet, relaxed, and just let you say what you want to say. So all the best for 2012. Would be great to see you back up and win two championships in a row.
Why not?
Anyway, the important thing is don't try and win the championship tomorrow.
No. It's long. The championship is very long.
Yeah, that's right.
We try to do it from tomorrow to the end.
Carlos, thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate your time. Thank you.
No problem.
All right. Well, this is Phil Hall again reporting for MotoPod in Phillip Island, Australia for the first round of the World Superbike Championships. And I'm here on what's turned out to be a very, very difficult afternoon with the factory Aprilia rider, Eugene Laverty. Eugene, welcome to Australia, and I guess probably everybody's more concerned about what's happened in the last race, but we need to talk about what you're doing, and I guess the most important question is how do you feel?
Today I've been a lot better. Yesterday we had a big crash and ended up outside the top 20. But we made a big step this morning and got myself up to 11th, which brought me into Super Pole. Was the most important thing, to be in that top 16. And Super Pole didn't run after the unfortunate event that happened today, but we're set for the race tomorrow and I feel comfortable on the bike.
And does the cancellation of Super Pole give you a little bit more time to recuperate, a bit more time to rest the body and be fresh for tomorrow?
Yeah, I'd say it does. I'm probably one of the only riders that are actually happy that Super Pole didn't run. It just gives me a little bit more of a rest, and to start in the third row is fine. I was aiming just to get even top 16, so I'll take third row and see how the first race goes. It's always a strange one here at Phillip Island in a way, because the tyre life is a big issue. So we'll know more after the first race, but I feel comfortable that I can do 22 laps, and that's the most important thing for me.
Can the back tyre do 22 laps and be comfortable at the end?
On our bike, I'd say it can, yeah, but there seems to be some other riders who are having issues, so I'm just going to try and get a consistent pace and maintain that to the end, and hopefully I can pick off a few of them at the end.
Those of us that can't afford one are very jealous of people who ride Aprilia V4s because they are such a jewel of a bike. What's the superbike like to ride?
This bike, I would say, is as close to a MotoGP bike as you're going to get outside of MotoGP. It really is a special bit of kit, and it's so small and nimble as well, and narrow with the V4 configuration. So I really enjoyed the first laps I did on it, just being able to move around the bike so easily. Last year the bike was a bit bigger, and now this one felt more like a 600 or a 250, so I feel it can manhandle it a little bit better. And it looks after the rear tyre very well, which is definitely a good thing. It's rigid, as I expected, but that hasn't been an issue for me so far.
And how are you getting on with the rest of the team in terms of, you know, your communication with the mechanics and your pit crew and stuff like that's good?
Yeah, I get on with everybody well. I've brought two technicians along with me, Marcus Eschenbacher and Phil Mound, so I've worked with them before, and it was nice to have that continuity there. And with the Aprilia boys, they welcomed us as well, so, you know, before the first round, we already feel like part of the team, which is unusual, so it is a nice atmosphere, and I get on well with Gigi Deligny as well. A lot of respect for what he's achieved, and hopefully I can win them their next world title.
Actually, Jim Race, who runs MotoPod, told me to say hello to Phil, because apparently he met Phil and he knows Phil well, apparently, and he said, you know, he's a really cool guy.
That's right. We've known Jim for a lot of years, since 2008, so and Phil worked with me at Parc Algar Honda, so yeah, we go back a long way, and it's nice because those were some tough years as well, and now things are on the up and up, and hopefully we can finally get my hands on a title.
Eugene, you like Phillip Island, obviously.
I do like it here. It's fast flowing, and the race is always so different to practice. It's bizarre that riders make the same mistake time after time, where they'll go out for one fast lap, and then come 22 laps, the grid's almost flipped upside down sometimes. So it's interesting as well for the spectators, because it isn't set out in practice often. A lot of the other rounds, you know, the top eight guys in the grid are going to be there in the race, whereas here it can really just be flipped in its head. So it's an exciting track and one of my favourites.
What sort of rider does this track favour?
I'd say a smooth rider and patient as well, because it's hard to control your right hand when you know you can go faster, but that's what you have to do sometimes. If you know you've got another 20 laps to go, there's no point in destroying that rear tyre.
Yes, and of course you don't win the championship in the first round, do you?
No, you don't. And I've had a rough start to the season now. I'm just happy that I'm going to be on the grid for tomorrow, and I want to get two solid finishes. I don't really know what we can achieve, to be honest, until I get that first race under me, but a top six would be really nice.
Bank some points.
Yeah, just to bank some points and make it worthwhile, make all the effort worthwhile. We've had a lot of hard graft over the last week, along with my osteopath, Mickey Kerr, just to get myself back in action, and it'd be nice to score some points and make that all worthwhile.
It has been a rough week, hasn't it?
it's been rough for a lot of riders, for me and Leon Haslam as well. He's busted himself up, and now Chaz Davies and John Hopkins. It's just been one of those years so far. Everyone seems to be getting banged up, but we'll all be back in the grid for round two, all being well.
And are you looking forward to getting back to the European rounds, where you're a little bit closer to home and closer to the base of operations, sort of thing?
Yeah, because this is a strange format now. It's different to the European rounds. European rounds, we have a routine how we do things with the motorhome and hospitality and truck and everything there. Now we're operating out of cabins and garages, yes, and hotels, and it's very different. So be looking forward to getting back to normality on the European tour.
Eugene, how does the new single bike rule affect you?
Well, so far it hasn't, but I'm sure it will at some stage. It's only really an issue if you crash at the beginning of the session. That really is when it's a problem. So you've got to have that in the back of your mind at all times, which is tough because you've got to be pushing to the limit to improve. So yeah, you can get unlucky at times as well, but you just got to think about it.
Can I just ask you a hypothetical thing? It seems to me the single bike rule was brought in to save costs, but surely the teams now travel with many more spares than what they travelled with before, because they know they might have to rebuild one bike. In the end, isn't it going to cost the same?
I'd say it does. In my opinion, the same, if not more. So it's a step they made to change the rules, but there's always rule changes. Some are positive, some are negative, and I'm sure the organisers will learn from it either way.
Yep. And you like working for Aprilia? They're good guys?
They are, because Aprilia, it is just about racing. That's what they got into business for in the first place, is yep, to win races and to win championships.
Yep.
So they're everything. The street bike, you just have to look at it. It really is a race bike.
With lights.
With lights.
Correct.
And bars, and you take them off and you're just about ready to go. So I really like the mentality, and they don't really have any fools around them. Everybody that's working here has been in the team in a long time, and they've been working through 125 and 250 Grand Prix, so a lot of experience, and they know how a motorbike works.
Just standing at the gate or at the door of the garage and watching the team work, they're incredibly efficient.
They are. They've been doing it for many years, as I say, so they know they don't be affected by pressure, and it is similar to how it is for a rider, just a matter of routine and doing your checklist and getting things all under control.
I've got to ask you this, and you know, you can be as diplomatic or frank as you like. What's it like having Max as a teammate?
So far, it's been fine, I have to say. Max does his thing and I do my own thing. He seems to be just a very quiet person and gets on with the job. So I have respect for him because he's won a lot of world championships as well. So that's a goal of mine in the future. I've got a few more years to do it, and it's nice now to be on the same bike as Max. So I know if I can battle with him on the same machinery, then I know my level's pretty high.
And does having two lots of data from you and from him, is that a helpful thing?
It is in any team, really. You know, we're both given feedback to try and improve the bike, and we're both different riders, so I don't look much at what he's doing and he doesn't look much at what I'm doing. We've just got blinkers on and get on with our own job. I think the professional riders do that. It's the same riders that go out and do their own thing on the track rather than the guys who sit and wait for a tow because they don't know what they're doing. You know,
yeah.
Me and Max have ridden long enough that we know.
Yeah, well, he certainly has ridden for a long time, hasn't he? I mean, his longevity in the sport is amazing.
He keeps himself in good shape. He's now, I think, 41 years old, so still to be doing what he's doing at his age is very impressive, and he's still hungry to win a world title as well.
Well, this is about Eugene Laverty, but I just have to ask one more question about Max, because just when I walked out here to come and talk to you, two 15, 16-year-old girls walked up and asked for Max's autograph, and I thought to myself, here's a 41-year-old guy, and he's got these teenage girls rushing up to him to get his autograph and have their photograph taken with him.
Yeah, everyone knows Max. You know, I was a fan of his as well when I was younger, so you got to appreciate that he's achieved a lot in the sport, and people want a piece of him.
Long-term goals?
For me, I want to reach MotoGP in the next few years, but really the immediate goal is to win a world championship. I've been runner-up twice now, and I think it's about time I finally got the top spot.
Excellent. That's the focus, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. That's my focus for this year. Last year was a rookie year, but now I've got to do the business.
Eugene, thanks so much for sparing us your time. I know you've been so busy and there's just so many demands on your time, but really appreciate you giving us 10 minutes or so, and wish you all the best for tomorrow.
No problem. You're welcome.
Thank you. So, World Superbike Championships opening round at Phillip Island, Australia, in glorious sunny weather, and it's my pleasure to be talking to Giorgio Barbier, who is the team manager for Pirelli Tyres. And Giorgio, firstly, thank you for sparing me the time, because I know that you're a very busy man here this weekend, because you have an essential product that every rider here needs lots and lots of, and that's tyres. Giorgio, I guess the first and the most important question that probably all of our listeners will want to know is how many tyres did you bring here to Phillip Island this weekend?
Yes, considering we got racing just for two classes, Superbike and Supersport, and we got a test on Monday and Tuesday, we move 4,600 tyres.
Wow, and that includes a supply of wet weather tyres, obviously, if they would be required, which it looks like they won't be.
Yes, that's true. But we have to be ready for everything, all the weather condition. Here in South Australia, in this end of the summer, you must find a lot of rain, you must find 12 degrees, or you must find 40 degrees like today.
Yes. Yes.
So you have to be ready with product that cover all the possible conditions. There is not one product only that could make this, but we try to make not so specialized tyres who move a range of working just to 2 degrees every time. So that means to have a free solution for the superbike front and free solution for the rear, in order to cover some different needs, from bike difference, because we got six different manufacturers, riding style, and weather condition, asphalt temperatures.
And if you put all of those combinations together, you're looking at thousands of possibilities, aren't you?
Right. Actually, every rider has got one basket of tyres, around 90, 100 tyres, and they might just use in a race in Superbike 25. International Federation of Control, that they use just 25 tyres, 11 front and 14 rear. But they could make a choice among 80 tyres, more or less. So they could change their mind till the warm-up and decide to tell to Pirelli, okay, I decide to race with this solution or another one, and could change mind all the time.
Your technicians in there, I've passed by there and stood and watched. They are incredibly hard-working people, aren't they?
Well, there are the people who work in the fitting, and there are people who work in a pit lane together with the teams and with the rider. Yeah. So one work is just they work to fit the tyres and to inflate the tyres. The other one is just to attend the rider in order to understand and got the feedback from them about the tyres' behaviour.
Yep, so every time after a session I've been walking up and down pit lane, as soon as the rider comes in, there's someone there in a Pirelli shirt sitting down with them, taking the tyre temperature, and they're sitting down with the rider, and you can see that they're saying, how did it feel, you know, was it good, is there ways that we could improve, and things like that.
You can imagine every race for us is a big platform of information.
Sure.
Everything comes from the riders. Every information is important for us to go home and work on the product.
And the condition of the tyre and how the tyre works, that really is something that can't be measured electronically, can it? You can't plug something into the computer like you do with the ECU on the bike and find out where it revs and where it doesn't. You're almost completely in the hands of the riders to get that feedback about your tyres, aren't you?
Fine. The feeling of the rider still remains the most important source of information.
Yep.
Because they live, from a human point of view, the experience.
Yes. Yes. And I guess the other thing would be that your technicians would find that there are some riders who are very good at giving you that feedback and others who they have to help more.
This is the history, always happen. But everything comes is welcome. We got some riders that are very strong, very good, very fast, but they are not able to tell you anything about the tires. But you can just, with the chronograph, control the lap time and say, okay, this tire is better than the other because it's faster and because it's steadily faster, maybe.
Yes.
And other riders who lose themselves in a long description about the feeling,
yes.
Sometimes you can just get two part of 100 in
yes.
order to have information.
Yes, yeah. So it's easy to get lost in the minute details of
sure,
the
but the good part of this control tire system is you cannot just rely in one rider response.
Mm.
We have 25 riders,
yeah. Yeah.
Six different manufacturers, a lot of engineers work on different setup, and so at the end, all the information could be really understandable because of the mass of them.
I've got to ask, because it's intrigued me since I first walked past your six shipping containers here and saw them stacked to the doors with tyres. What happens to the tyres once they've been used?
Well, all the used tyres are already cut with a knife in a sidewall here and sent back in Europe. They all come back to the factory, and the used ones are scrap and used for make carpet or something else, while the new one are rechecked and eventually recover and reuse in another race.
That must be awfully hard to destroy good tyres.
Oh, well, sometimes we've got tyres who make just few laps.
Yes.
But they are used, and so we have to destroy them.
Oh, dear. Yeah, as a motorcyclist who spends $300 to buy a tyre for his bike, that whole idea just makes me cringe.
That's true, but the riders are making another kind of job.
Yes, exactly. And so with the control tyre situation, because you have that massive input, it must be incredibly difficult to digest all of that and make sense of it.
Well, for sure, we got at first to create an important method of working in order to receive all the information, analyze them, and then get the next product ready. So this is something that with the year we increase and develop in the right way.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, at a flyaway round like this in Australia, you would bring a different set of tyres that you would bring if you were around in Europe, for example?
Fine, exactly, because Australia now is end of summer, it's very hot. We will go in 1 month in Imola. Spring in Italy means you might find from 10 to 20 degrees massive.
Mm, mm.
And then we go in Assen, where last year we got 7 degrees in April. So for sure you need very different tires, but the work we make during the season is in order to have a product that works and cover more situations as possible.
Mm.
That does not mean that the tires we will use here will be used in Assen, but...
Right.
For sure, the range has to be reduced in order to make more, versatile.
Yes, I understand. Are there any other races that you go to where your tyres would be experiencing the same sort of conditions as they do here?
Well, the only circuit that really is close to Phillip Island in terms of the same feature, the same problem you have is Monza, because
high speed.
Because of the high speed. So it's just different, the part of the tires that is interested. Here in Phillip Island, the corner 12, long run on the same patch area on the side of the left.
Yep.
While in Monza you got the stride center of the tire because of the too long stride and the too braking.
Yep.
When you brake, we up the rear tires, and the rear tires just slide on the asphalt, and
yes.
the temperature rise a lot.
Yes.
If you use the compound you need in the corner, in the center, you will blister for sure. So
yes.
you have to put a little stripe or harder compound in the center.
In the center, because that long straight, they're doing over 300 kilometers an hour down
yeah.
the main straight at Monza, aren't they?
And that is the reason why the tires we had here has got this center.
Yes.
Just for the use we will be in Monza, because
yes.
in this place you never really brake with a bike
no.
standing.
Well, of course, at Monza, you've got that silly chicane at the end of the main straight where they go down from maximum speed down to, what, 40 kilometres an hour or something?
In 30 metres.
Yeah. Let's not start on that. Oh, yeah, that's a pet hate of mine. But, yeah, that must be, as you say, that brings a whole set of difficulties with tyres that you wouldn't have otherwise.
Yeah, that's true.
Giorgio, thank you so much for your time. I've really appreciated hearing about it. As a layman, this is truly a black art to me. And I'm constantly impressed by the way that those guys can put 170 horsepower through a back tyre, and that when it comes back, it's still okay. Because I remember back when I started following road racing back in the 1970s, you could do a six-lap race and come back and the tyre was had it. And it's just amazing. Despite the speed increase, the power that's going through, the longevity of the tyre is actually increasing.
Yeah, but this still happens sometimes, but the problems come when the conditions are really at the limit, like today.
Sure. Look, Giorgio, thank you so much for your time. Welcome. You are a very busy man, and I appreciate you sparing me the time. And I'm sure that our listeners will be fascinated to hear the behind-the-scenes stuff. And it's great to find out all those sorts of things. So thank you so much
thank
for your time.
Thank you. Thank
really
you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, this is Phil Hall for MotoPod.com reporting from the World Superbike Championships at Phillip Island, and I have the great pleasure of talking to number one Kawasaki rider for the Works Kawasaki team, Tom Sykes. Tom, welcome back to Australia. It's great to have you here, and I suppose the first question I should ask is the weather.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the weather's something where we're not used to in the UK, certainly at this time of year, but in general, to be honest. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly hard work out there, but to be honest, the Kawasaki ZX-10i is quite dialed in. You know, we're quite consistent over race distance, and obviously in the hot weather, it does knock our performance a little bit, but something we're working on.
But it knocks everybody else's performance as well.
Yes, obviously it does, but for some reasons, the V-twins just seem to manage it that little bit better. But ultimately, Kawasaki have done a great job, and at the moment, consistency-wise, we're actually sitting quite well.
Well, actually, that was one of the first questions that I was going to ask you, because it isn't really Kawasaki that have done well. Basically, you've carried the can for the development of the ZX-10 almost by yourself, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, my teammates got injured, so a lot of work was left to me, but, I think all the engineers at Kawasaki have a lot of faith in me, which is very, very nice. Also, I enjoy working with all those guys. You know, they've got a lot of experience, and being invited to Japan to carry on testing was great. I think now everything's coming together, and it'd be nice to take a little bit of credit for it, because ultimately I have given a lot of feedback and put in a lot of hard work to get to where we are now, but hopefully all that hard work and effort by not only myself but Kawasaki and all of the team will be kind of paid off very soon.
Well, you've been at the pointy end all weekend so far. Are you happy with how it's going?
Yeah, I'd say relatively happy. We've been at the sharp end through testing and the race weekend at the moment. Obviously, now this is where things start. We've got Super Pole, we need to make it happen, and then the race is tomorrow. But to be at the sharp end, not only in official testing, but also in qualifying at the moment, it's quite promising, Phillip Island's never been my strong point, but like I said, the ZX-10i is working very good, and if we can put in a good performance at this track that's not particularly strong for myself and the four cylinders, then I think that's only promising heading back to Europe.
How difficult is it to do the flyaway rounds where you're so far away from home base?
Yeah, not a problem. I mean, normally I've got my fiancé and my granddad with me. Unfortunately, my granddad couldn't make this trip, but, I'm sure he'll be watching at home. But at the end of the day, I've been racing motorcycles since I was 14, so you learn to sacrifice things in life, but ultimately it's what we're doing is fantastic. I wouldn't change it for the world. So to be away from home, it's, you know, sometimes you might get a little bit, let's say, wish you were back at home. But ultimately, I think when you start thinking that, it's almost time to be hanging up the levers. At the moment, I enjoy being away because I'm doing what I love doing. And obviously being here in Australia when the sun is absolutely beating down and it's 36 degrees, it's you don't really miss the...
Minus 20 in the snow.
Exactly. You don't really miss that aspect too much. But, yeah, I mean, a lovely part of the world down here. We get to see some fantastic places throughout the World Superbike calendar. So, yeah, it makes it all added bonus.
Tom, there's been the usual hard luck story so far this weekend, but your career with Kawasaki has been pretty much injury-free, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I took a big knock last year in Silverstone, but we came back strong from that with a win at Nürburgring, so certainly worth making the push to come back for. But yeah, I mean, normally it's, you know, I like to think I can understand where the limit is and hopefully not cross that that barrier. Having said that, you know, it is a sport that can catch people out, but yeah, you've just got to try and stay away from it. But yeah, like you said, touch wood, I've been quite lucky on that side of things. But yeah, it's something I try not to think about.
Well, yes, I suppose it's a similar sort of thing to what you said before. If you start thinking about it, then you probably should stop doing it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's I had a small crash yesterday, and, you know, I did think about it the next few laps at that same corner, just kind of thinking what I did. But yeah, the trouble is when you're thinking about it, you're robbing yourself of time. So it's a case of forget it, bite the bullet, and get on with the job in hand. Yeah,
focus.
Yeah.
Tom, I stood down during the free practice session this morning. I stood down on the pit wall near the exit to turn 12, and I've been going to bike races for over 30 years, and it still terrifies me watching you guys come off turn 12.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the slowest corner by any stretch of imagination. You know, like I said, the Kawasaki's working well there. We're, especially on fresh tyres, we're probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest, in the last two corners. So that's good. You know, that's unfortunately where my teammate went down yesterday. He picked quite an interesting corner to sample the tarmac, which is unfortunate. But like you said, it's such a old school circuit here, and one I think we all enjoy.
Yes, it's interesting, the feedback all up and down the pit lane from everybody I've been talking to is that it, not only just because of the weather, but because of the circuit itself, the guys love coming to Phillip Island.
Yeah, I mean, very old school. I think that's why you see a lot of English riders go well here. Mm. You know, like in the UK, BSB, it's very old school tracks, and let's say quite circuits that suit, let's say, a lot of confidence. So yeah, it's at the moment we've got quite good feel on the rear and the front of the bike. You know, you have to have a bit of good front end feel for this circuit, and you know, we're still looking for a little bit of that, but we're not too far away.
Your front end feel when you're tipping into turn one is pretty important, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, every corner you've got turn one, two, three, then you've also got you know, seven and eight, nine, and then the last two corners, it's all front end. So yeah, at the moment we still need to work a little bit on that, but you know, we'll get there. A
couple more things, Tom. You were talking about the race. How do you think the bike is going to go on a full race distance? You haven't really had a chance to do a full race distance simulation, have you? And in fact, the way that practice and qualifying is set up here, you don't get a chance to do that at all, do you?
Yeah, you don't get much chance now at the race meetings, but we did three or four simulations through testing. We've also put in a lot of laps in qualifying practice, so yeah, we're not sitting in a bad shape, to be honest. I'm, you know, quietly confident we can be strong in terms of four cylinder. We just need to see what the V twins and let's say V fours do tyre life. But at the moment, I think we're not too bad. My main concern is getting a good starting slot and a good race start. After that, I think we should be quite consistent for the race.
Excellent. And of course, get back to Europe, where you're a bit closer to home base, and your resources are a bit more easily available for you as well?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I had an off on Friday, which is a first time in 12 days of testing and, you know, a few thousand kilometres, so I can't be too hard on myself. But going back to Europe, you know, we know our particular setup at the moment is going to be stronger on those tracks, but, you know, we'll see. That's after here, and at the moment we need to focus on trying to make Phillip Island work for us. You know, just to come away with two good point scores on the board will be a kind of job done for me and I think Kawasaki.
Yep, and I think that's a great attitude to have, because it's the start of the season. You don't win the championship at the first meeting, do you?
Certainly don't. So yeah, couple on the board, and yeah, then we'll pick it up in Europe. Yeah.
Tom Sykes from Team Kawasaki, right up at the pointy end this weekend, and I wish you all the best. I hope it goes great for you, and thank you so much for sparing us the time in your very busy schedule to talk to us.
No problem, always a pleasure. Cheers.
Okay, so this is Phil Hall again, reporting for motopod.com from the opening round of the World Superbike Championships at Phillip Island here in Australia. And it's a great pleasure to be able to chat to Honda team rider Jonathan Ray. John, firstly, it's been a pretty tough weekend so far for the team.
Well, yes and no. I had a little unscheduled get-off in, what is it now, qualifying two in this morning. And it kind of threw us out a little bit, and we ended up finishing overall qualifying eighth, which wasn't exactly where we wanted to be, but, you know, Super Pole got cancelled. Unfortunately, young rider got killed in the Aussie Super Sport race, and right now our thoughts are with his friends and family. But for me, for my race as well, looking forward to tomorrow. It's not the best place to be, on the second row on the inside, but we'll make our best job of it, really, and see what we can do.
It's a long race.
Yeah, sure, and that's Phillip Island. The big character here is, you know, what happens between lap 15 to 20. You know, you give the tyres so much stick around this track that you need to work so hard on a race setup. You know, already we've seen some guys who can be fast for one lap, and not so many guys doing long runs. So either they're super confident, or you know, we're second guessing ourselves, you know, by doing these laps. So I hope it pays off tomorrow. There's it's going to be very, very hard to, I feel, catch Carlos Chaca. He's seems to be in a planet of his own right now. But you know, for the rest, I think we can fight, and our goal is to be on the podium.
And I'm leading on from what you just said about the accident this morning, the impact of the single bike rule puts a lot more pressure on your mechanics and crew if something like that happens at a critical time during the day, or in fact during the weekend at all.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I went down quite slowly at MG. It's a first gear corner. I lost the front, but on the right side, I kind of took all the controls away from the handlebar and you know, the footrest assembly as well. So it gave the guys a lot of work to do, and they had to rewire throttle cables and put them to the fly-by-wire rotor, and, you know, new handlebars, clamp, and that took, you know, it seemed like forever sitting in the box, but it was only 10 minutes or something, and I got out there.
I was watching,
and
it was quick.
Yeah, it was super quick, and they, we just worked again on a new tyre for the race, and tried to put a few more laps on, but unfortunately, yeah, my confidence in the race run was not where it should be, really, but we picked ourselves up in pre-practice, just before the scheduled Super Pole, and we're right back to the front where we should be. And it's that Saturday night. It's always that kind of where you're second guessing your rivals, thinking, you know, what strategy have they been on? You know, with the Pirelli tire, the grip and the feedback is very, very good, but you know, the grip level on lap one is phenomenal, but the grip level on lap five is a little bit different, so we have to manage the tyre throughout the race, and it's going to be a long race for sure.
The current situation with the amount of time that you get on the track during a weekend doesn't really give you time to do a full race simulation, does it?
No, we got close today, but yeah, they've cut the session time down from last year. We had 2 1-hour sessions and 2 45, and now it's all 45-minute sessions. So, yeah, like when you do something stupid, like I did this morning and crashed, you know, you lost valuable time. Mm. But, you know, I've done so many laps here. You know, the test Monday, Tuesday. We had a private test here in January, so... Yes. I've done so many laps of this circuit, I feel like, you know, we're just like finding little pieces here and there. We're not finding a chunk of time, so it's you know, it's who wins tomorrow is going to be you know, who's the smartest guy that preserved their tire, and yeah, see what happens.
You're riding it like a local.
Yeah, I don't know how the locals ride it, but
crazy.
Yeah. Well, we're trying to step away from the crazy line. You know, just keep everything nice and smooth.
Championship isn't won in the first meeting.
No, definitely not. But you know, a lot of guys now are injured. They've had big crashes throughout pre-season. So we don't want to tiptoe into the season either. You know, we want to make these points count in the first races, and yeah, just get back to Europe. We're kind of feeling it amongst everyone as the championship starts there. But yes. We'll be giving it everything.
Bank what points you can here, and then get home to home base.
Yeah, well, that makes it sound a little bit like I'll just settle for finishes, but that's
not at all.
That's not the case. You know, tomorrow we want to push for the podium. I think it's aside from the session I stepped off, we've always been in the top 4 or 5. So
sure have, yeah.
There's no reason why we can't aim there. You know, it's exciting, you know, because everyone uses different strategies. Now our soft race tire, we're using the bigger tire here because of the amount of heat generated at Phillip Island, so it's a different profile. But they have a soft and a hard, and for me the soft tire is not really working for the long distance. It's working for the lap time, you know, it makes you feel happy and stuff, but you know, it might not be there at the end. The harder tire is maybe a little bit less kind of less good on the stopwatch, but it's going to hang in there. So there's going to be a lot of guys gambling on the soft. There'll be a lot of guys being conservative on the hard. But you know, nobody knows where they're going to stack up until the end of the race. That's the fun part.
What's it like having that guy as a teammate?
Heroes. You know, he seems like a nice guy off the bike. He's obviously come from MotoGP with, you know, this great pedigree. He's a 250cc world champion. So
the last 250cc world champion.
Utmost respect for him.
Sure.
But, you know, it's a lot of people like to compare Superbike and MotoGP, but it's completely different. You know, you know, what makes a good Superbike rider doesn't necessarily make a good GP rider. And,
yes.
You know, good GP riders don't make great Superbike riders.
Well, we've seen that, haven't we?
It's very, very hard. It's almost like two different sports now. But the fun part for me in Superbike is it's so competitive. You know, it's you can't really predict the top five every weekend, and that's motivating as a rider.
Sure.
Whether you're riding for Honda or different manufacturers, you know, I think the chance to win here in this class with is open to many manufacturers and many riders, and that's cool.
I'm glad you mentioned Honda, of course, because it's Honda's 60th anniversary, which is a really big thing. And the team going into this season without a major naming rights sponsor, the bike's reverting to the traditional, in inverted commas, Honda colour scheme. And there must be that extra motivation to do it for Honda because it's such an important year for the factory.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I've been with Honda all my career since 2003, starting off in 125 British Championship. But you know, I've seen such a big change in the last year to the mindset of our team. You know, they're definitely taking things serious now, and the rules changing to allow everyone to use fly by wire brought our bike right up to spec with everything else out there. So we're certainly trying hard as a team, and you know, as a manufacturer, without a title sponsor, we're still going racing. So that's you know, that says a lot in itself.
And of course, there is a certain amount of internal pressure there because of the past success that Honda has had.
Well, you know, it's no amount of pressure kind of amounts to what I put in myself. So it's
fair call.
Surely I feel that it's important for the team and the manufacturer and all the sponsors to do well. But, you know, I want to do well for myself first and foremost. And then after that, it's the team. You know, I've been with this team for so long. They're like family. I've brought some guys in from BSB that I've worked with before and Chris Pike. And we're working very well together. And I hope we can do this thing together and see what happens. But it's a long season, you know. I'm talking way out of turn here. We haven't even turned a wheel. And we've got big hopes, but there's no reason why it can't happen.
Well, you have to have that focus, haven't you? You've got to say to yourself, we can do this and we're starting tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. You know, there's a little bit of a... You know, I'm my own worst critic. And I struggle with consistency a little bit, but I don't think it's just me. I think the bike was a lot to do with that. And there's no doubt, and I know how fast I am. I win World Superbike races and yeah. won a lot of them, but you know, I haven't won a championship and I've been quite a far cry away from it. So, you know, I think a lot of things need to change with me, a little bit more of a mature approach, and who knows. But, you know, it feels good so far. And, you know, tomorrow is all about bagging big points and moving on and, you know, attacking every race by race and let the championship worry about itself.
Sure. Jonathan, I always remember that fabulous race, I think it was 2 years ago at Assen. That was just, the, you know, your passing manoeuvres in the twisty stuff just before the start and finishing line. I mean, a bike shouldn't be able to do that, but you made it do it lap after lap after lap. That must do... Yeah, a great deal for your confidence to know that you can tip a bike in and do that, pass people around the outside and things like that. Was just sensational.
Yeah, you know, it's Aston's a great place for me. I've got really fond memories of it. And I don't know why, but it always seems to kind of work there with me and the bike works good there. You know, it's it doesn't have too many bad points of that circuit. And it's just nice to do well there, you know. Mm. I couldn't tell you what it is, and I'm just really happy to have that kind of reputation as well as a, you know, a young guy that gives his best. And, you know, I think that shows in my riding a lot with, you know, making ludicrous passing manoeuvres where nobody else does and making them stick. And, you know, for me, it's fun. That's I can see my team cringing on the seats watching the monitors or people at home. Like
and us on TV as well.
Jumping up and down. But for me, that's fun. You know, I just love riding bikes. I've ridden bikes since I was... 3 years old and in motocross, and you know, it's them kind of things excite me. So it's I don't think they excite my competitors too much, but definitely works for me.
Jonathan, I've often wondered, when you're racing, you're so much focused, do you notice the crowd and the crowd's reaction while you're racing, or is it just you're far too tunnel vision to actually think about that?
For me, it's a little bit tunnel vision. On the circuit, sure, You notice it when you're sat in the pit box and you're walking out to the bike, the grandstand in front of the boxes is, you know, you notice that atmosphere. And, you know, on the slowing down laps and stuff, you've got time to take that in. One thing I notice a lot on circuit is the big TV monitors for the crowd. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's, for me, it's sometimes a good gauge. You know, we've got two here in Phillip Island, one on the start straight we can look at and one into MG. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's some people think it's crazy, you know, looking out there, but you know, it's sometimes it works in the race. When you think someone's behind you, you can see exactly the gap and adjust race strategy accordingly.
Yeah, you'll see, for me as a non-racer, I would think that having those big screens there would be a super distraction.
Well, you know, I went P1 yesterday afternoon, and as soon as I crossed the line, I looked left to the big screen and I seen the time come up, and I knew it was enough. And that's funny, you know. A very funny story I can tell you about 2008. There was a big screen in Villalunga in Italy, and on the Supersport bike I had like a 4 second lead, and I was kind of getting a little bit bored out front. It was very hard to keep my concentration. So
yep.
Going into this big screen when the camera was on me, you know, I tried to see. Always tried to see if I could see my wrist, you know, blipping the throttle. But, you know, luckily I won the race and I had a little bit of time to kill and keep my mind occupied. It was a pretty boring race, but, you know, quite fun as well.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, you've done as you say, you've done everything except actually win a championship, so that's got to be the goal this year, hasn't it?
Well, I'll have you know, I won a British motocross championship back in 97. Oh, so,
my apologies.
There's a championship in there somewhere, but yeah, not at the level I want. You know, it's but it's hard, you know, it's not, it doesn't come for free, and you have to work hard for it. And you know, I'm racing against some very experienced guys, you know, here in Superbike, it's. You know, it's not just jump on a proper race machine and ride it. You know, it's a lot of setting up, a lot of... and that's where you see these guys at 40 years old still at the front because they've got that experience. Yeah. I wish I could buy it, you know. I'd do all right. So, you know, I think what I lack in experience, I make up in an effort and determination on the track. And sometimes that's my biggest enemy, but... You know, we're still, my goal is still to be a world champion. It has been since I was very young. And, you know, I hope it's in this class, the premier class, and see what happens.
Jonathan, I stood down opposite turn 12 in the first session this morning and watched you guys coming out of 11 and through 12 there with the bike squirming around and so forth. And I looked at it and I thought to myself, these guys are crazy.
Yeah, that's it's a little bit of Phillip Island character because you're so long on the side of the tyre. And, it's that balance as well, you know, spinning the tyre is going to kill it, and, you know, too much electronics is going to slow it down, and, you know, that's where we're at. It is a tough track to get right, and it's a very, very fine balance. It looks spectacular. You know, sometimes I wish I could just go and, you know, watch us guys on the circuit and see what it is, because even, you know, I go and watch my brother race local in Ireland, and I think, God, these guys are going so fast, but, you know, there's so many seconds off, you know, what we're doing out there, so maybe I might even scare myself watching. Better to stay behind the screen.
I've heard it said that when you're actually out there doing that, everything tends to slow down.
Well, I don't know. When I put my earplugs in and put the helmet on, it's like such a quiet little place. It's you know, there's no stress, there's no shouting, there's no wind noise, and everything's quiet, and I feel like just I'm just there on my own on a track, and not too much is going on. Nothing's annoying me, and just do my thing. It's quite bizarre, actually, that feeling when you're out there. But then you get guys on track that annoy you, and that, you know, that raises the blood pressure a little bit. But it's all right.
Jonathan, thank you so much for spending the time with us this afternoon. I know it's been a busy day, and it's been a tragic day as well, and that's affected everybody, even though it was like in a domestic thing. There is this brotherhood of riders, and I understand how that works. So I really appreciate you spending the time with us, and it was great for you to be out there on pit lane now just a few minutes ago and see your teammate Brock Parks take pole in the Supersport as well.
Yeah, I was cheering Brock on, you know, it's just highlights that it's such a family team. But, you know, just to go back over what you just said, it's days like today, we know they happen. And, you know, I'm a big fan of every motorbike rider, whether it's from, you know, motocross to road racing. You know, I'm interested in bikes and watch it. And when things like that happen, it puts it all into perspective that, you know, we are warriors out there, each and every one of us doing our best, and you know, these things happen.
And walking a very fine line.
And it's you know, it's very hard to criticise anybody because of the risks involved. And you know, it's a very sad day for the whole paddock because it you never think these things are going to happen, but you know, they do. You know, I've lost a couple of friends now, and you know, it doesn't get any easier. But you know, as the racing paddock as well, that. You know, I live for it. You know, it's a, you know, we don't think about the bad, you know, and as a racing paddock, we pick ourselves back up and we go out and do battle and do what we all love, and you know, there'll be nobody out there trying harder tomorrow, and we'll see what happens.
Jonathan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you sparing us the time and giving us your candid thoughts on what's happening. It's been great to talk to you, and on behalf of all the community, wish you all the best tomorrow. As a sidebar, as a dedicated dyed-in-the-wool Honda man, I hope you win tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks very much, and thanks to all your listeners. Keep listening.
All right, well, wow. What can I say? Massive thanks to Phil for taking care of that stuff for us. It's very, very cool. We always, Jules, you and I know that we always love to do interviews on site, and I'm kind of jealous.
especially there, yeah, indeed. I mean, yeah. good stuff. Thanks a lot, Phil.
Yeah, thank you very much.
I'm looking forward to next week.
I am too.
Gonna get more.
yeah, we'll run even more next week because he kicked ass. Moving on, you want to talk about race two?
Yeah, I believe that it's worth talking about.
Yeah, it didn't suck.
It did not suck.
yeah.
So just to kind of, you know, lay the groundwork here. You know, we were kind of robbed of a battle in the first race because Checa launched himself. And here we were robbed of that battle because in turn one, which is, you know, the fast doing quarter, you know, the bikes get going and they're in a big pack, and Max Biaggi has had a really horrific accident here in 2009 when he was with the Stella Regatta Ducati team. I don't know if you remember, that was like a couple laps after the yep. start. You know, he was coming down the straight and just completely. Was it that he touched another bike, or was he? No, he didn't touch another. Yeah, there was a little contact, but it wasn't like a contact with the brake lever. But he did not hit his brake marker and just freaking flew into the sand trap. It was yeah. insane crash.
Just crazy. I'm gonna pause you for a moment.
Yeah.
Can you hear that in the background? There are coyotes outside my window. They're howling.
Oh, dude, really? No, I can't hear it. Now I'm wishing for your fucking laptop.
I don't care. Carry it outside, go wireless, right?
Oh my god, that's so okay. cool. All right, anyway. Okay, so coyotes aside, so what happened was that Biaggi and Sykes had a very small get together there, and right before they hit the corner, and apparently Biaggi was not able to engage his brake at his braking marker, and somehow managed to save the bike through the dirt, re-entered the track a couple seconds behind last man, so he was in 24th place.
But he didn't go down, which was key.
He didn't go down. Yeah, exactly. He was able to keep the bike upright.
Yeah, people to go off at turn one, and we know that we had this during. Obviously, it took out a bunch of guys that went off at turn one. Haslam, Laverty, guys that go off at turn one, and as we heard in the conversation that I had with Damo Cullen earlier in the show, and I had a conversation with folks on Twitter about how turn one may need to be reshaped as far as that, because people that have gone off at turn one at PI typically get beat to shit. Yeah. You know, you go off there, if you fall and go off, you're going to tumble. If you run off there upright, you're going to crash. Because the way that they groom it is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like skiing moguls at 200 miles an hour.
Right. And isn't there also like if you don't slow down quickly enough, that you start going downhill again and back yeah. onto the track?
Yep. And then I talked to, I was texting with James back and forth with him. And we were talking about that. And when he was running there, it was all grass. And so guys would go off there in the wet, and there was no way to stop. And they ended up like re-entering over a jump on a turn three.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And so it was a mess. So there's no real fix for it. And frankly, you would not want to change the nature of the corner because it is one of the perfect corners on the GP and World Superbike circuit. You don't want to change the corner itself, but maybe the runoff could use a little bit, you know, maybe 100 yards out, some big old airbags you can run into if you have to. But in Biaggi's case, the fact that he was able to run off and continue certainly played into the race too.
Yeah, yeah, because then what proceeded was almost a Rossi, like, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You yeah, know? Here's your 10-second penalty. Go get them, boys.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The bike is very fast, and James Wooden loves to point that out.
Yeah.
Look at that Aprilia go. Well, there's a guy aboard that Aprilia, and there's other Aprilias there that didn't do the same thing. I was blown away because this is not a small grid. It's a pretty big grid. It's 24 bikes, and Max Biaggi was able to cut through them all. And, you know, we're not going to talk about it forever because you guys have probably seen it in the race, but, you know, he ended up in second. And you know, was catching Checo. Obviously, there was no way he was going to catch him with that kind of gap that Checo was pulling, but he was doing better lap times. He had the fastest lap of the race.
Yep.
And I think it was a lap record, in fact. It was.
And to be honest, I think that was that may have been, for me, one of the finest moments of as far as courage and discipline of Biaggi's career.
Yeah.
He
didn't make a single mistake that ride, because, you know, he's so well known for, okay, passes a guy in a fast corner, because he's a corner speed guy, obviously, we know.
Yep.
That.
Yep.
So he passes a guy in a corner a little bit too deep into the corner. He's not very good on the brakes as much as other riders, so he screws up the exit and gets repassed. None of that this time around. This time everything was just perfect.
Apparently they've figured out how to let Max ride a 1000cc Aprilia RSV4 factory like a Aprilia RS250.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking as I was watching. I was like, I haven't seen him ride really that well since those days.
Yeah, it's amazing, and it does bode well for the boys who are running in the CRT class with the Aprilia engine and the prototype frame.
Indeed.
Crazy, crazy stuff. So Checo, Biaggi, and thank you very much, Tom Sykes, for getting on the box and coming in third.
Yep. Johnny Ray again. Well, he looked like him and Sykes had a fantastic battle for that third spot. I don't know. I feel Johnny Ray must have been annoyed, because I think he was going into this race feeling really, really strong.
I mean, that being said, Jules, it's you know, the first race weekend of the year.
Yes.
He garnered plenty of points. And if you look at all the guys that picked it up, or put it down, everybody sort of came out of this with a decent amount of points, the guys that you would expect.
Yeah. We have so in the standings, we have Biaggi with 45, because obviously he won the first and second race. 24th to second, just to remind you.
Yeah.
and then we have Melandri, because of his second place finish in the first race, and he was sixth in the second. So he's second. And third is Tom Sykes, because he did well in both races. And then we have Checo, who won one and DNF the other, and Johnny Ray's in fifth.
Yep. And a huge tip of hat to both Leon Haslam and Eugene Laverty for strong finishes. Haslam in fifth and Laverty in eighth in race two.
Amazing. Amazing.
And Hero, you know, picked up a ninth in race two. I mean, strong.
Yeah, no, he had an eighth in race one and a ninth, and he was talking about it afterwards. He said, "Yeah, you know, I think I just basically need to work on this on the qualifying, and then and then he'll be okay."
Yep. Well, and so if we actually had a qualifying round,
there you go.
Yeah. It's something they may think about, you know, in the future. You know, if things get rained out, or, you know, God forbid, we end up with some circumstance where they can't run Super Bowl. It will be interesting, you know, the tires that they have for Super Bowl, that, you know, the one or two rear softs to run.
Yep.
It will be fun to see what Hurricane could do with those. And, that's something I'm definitely looking forward to.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Cool. Let's run to the Super Sport race. Okay. I was very disappointed because, my boy Skopek was qualified really well and didn't even make it past lap one.
Well, you poles stick together.
It'd be so nice. It'd be so nice to see him, you know, get some serious points this year. He had moments of brilliance last year and kind of threw him away, which is really, really frustrating, because he's a very talented rider. Well, anyway,
Isn't Turkey like adjacent to Poland?
Turkey? No, it's not.
Okay. Oh, that's right. It's down there.
In the 16th century, yes.
before the continents separated.
Yeah.
Carry on.
All right. So, so I'm not going to dwell too much on it. We had a really good French battle. We had Jules Cousel, who's, you know, obviously a Moto2 transfer. to Super Sport. It's actually, if you think about it, the perfect kind of transfer, right? In terms of the kind of bike you're riding.
Except for, in a way, it's considered a downgrade.
Yeah, I know. I mean, definitely, he would rather be in Moto 2. But, yeah. But you know,
if you're going to downgrade, you might as well go to the PTR squad because they know how to build bikes.
I was just going to say, that it's a great team. It's a great team, and it's going to be, I think, a very fruitful partnership.
Mm-hmm.
And him and Foray had a... You know, they were fighting for first for a lot of the race.
I believe the term you're looking for is a ding-dong battle.
Ding-dong battle, exactly, exactly. So something that, you know, Martin likes to joke about Jules Cluzel, and very rightly so, you know, scaring the pants out of other riders because he does tend to crash. But, you know, he really kept it together the entire weekend, actually. He was very impressive. I think he knows the reputation he's coming with. So... But yeah, everybody up there, Sam Lowe's, Brooke Parks, who we maybe have heard from, and then Safuaglu, who I didn't expect actually to.
I didn't either.
To make it up there, and Safuaglu ended up winning the race.
Yeah. Well, and it doesn't bother me that we had a pair of cowboys on the box.
Yeah.
You know me.
Of course, Mr. Green.
Yeah, Mr. Green. I don't root for racers, but I do root for Green. It was a very, very pleasing weekend and actually kind of nice. And I, too, Jules, was surprised to see Keenan back in the box and pleased and thrilled for him. It will be interesting, you know, guys like Keenan and Jules Cluzel, who have stepped down from Moto2 to World Supersport. You know, it's your ticket back up again. And so, you know, this kind of performance right off the bat, I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of cross pollination, if you will, between the two classes, and it will be neat to see the guys that can pull it together in the World Superbike stage or World Supersport and make their way back into the MotoGP paddock, because ultimately that's really where the guys, you know, want to be if the money is there.
No doubt. I mean, Safuaglu, you know, really took a very short time in Moto2. I mean, he was basically there three races in a season, right?
But you have to remember that he came in and did that wild card appearance and kicked ass.
No, that's what I mean. So he had a couple of races and then one season.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just one season that he did in Moto2.
Right, but he did a wild card
A couple of wild cards prior. But yeah. And, you know, so he's a super sport veteran, and he obviously has a couple of championships under his belt.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Jules Cluzel, this is a new game for him. Obviously, took very well to the bike and the situation. Obviously, he knows the track.
You remember when Keenan went to the Takata team in World Superbike and basically failed?
Yes.
And so
maybe this is his space, you know?
Yeah. I mean, the sometimes small bikes are. I'm always an advocate of those. You know.
Right on.
So your top three were Keenan Safuaglu, Fabian Foray, and Brock Parks. Well done, Australia. Good for getting in the box. Cluzel, Lowe's, Marias, Quarmby, another PTR bike, Balini, and surprising from that, Inutsu and Lucas Paycheck, that's right next to Poland, is it not?
Yes, that one is.
Okay. That's over in the Europe, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Wow.
All right. By the way, how is Imre Toth still racing?
Why not?
You know?
Dude, you know,
I can't remember when he hasn't been racing.
Well, you're not as old as I am, are you? Not yet.
But you look back, dude, you can go back to the early 90s and you see his name.
Well, okay. Chorus Laparossi.
yeah, that's true. But it's so many different series and different bikes. It's amazing. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I'm those kind of folks garner a whole bunch of respect from me. Just the fact that they can keep on keeping on, and Supersport, World Supersport, is probably a great place to continue a career. Yeah. And he he's gathering from his home country, that being Hungary, a ton of sponsorship that's needed to bring into the series.
He's been kind of like another Lucio Ciccinello, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been able to do this for year after year after year without ever really, you know, being on the sharp end. So he's a good businessman and a good writer.
Yeah. And I was actually kind of thrilled to see that we still had some triumphs up there. You know, a three-cylinder Daytona 675 in, what, eighth and ninth.
Yep.
That's pretty cool, too. It's a bike that wasn't updated this year, as far as I know, technically. So, wow. You know, we've got a pretty good mix. Parakawis and a Honda on the top. The one thing that we don't have anywhere in the class is any Suzukis. And that's, what was the last Suzuki that we had, Jules? It was Robin Arms.
Oh, yeah.
A couple of years back.
Yep.
And so Suzuki needs to bring the Gixxer 600 back in somehow.
Because it's, Australia and AMA have very successful Suzukis running there. So, yeah. It's actually surprising.
Time.
All right.
let's close this bitch.
Well, listen. So thanks for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed the interviews from Australia. And I think you said this best. This round always throws me for a loop because I get into this mode where it's like, okay, I'm looking forward to next week. We're not going to see any racing for
pause. Yeah.
It's a pause. It's like a
hit the pause button.
Yeah.
It is always weird when we get PI. And then, you know, if it wasn't for some of the testing that was going on, we'd be in a total funk.
Yeah.
Coolly, in the meantime, you know, we've got for you guys out there, we've got some interviews for you next week. We've got all the chatting that we can do on the Facebook fan page.
Don't forget to send your favorite rounds from MotoGP 2011. Actually, old classes.
Yep. And that, you can do that through Motopod at motopodcast.com. It'll make sure that gets to all of us here on the show.
Yep.
And we'd love to talk to you, and we'll respond. It's very strange. Yeah, you write into us, and we'll actually write back. Isn't that weird? Is there anybody else that does that?
Unless you write in to ask, never mind.
I know exactly what you're going to say. Yes. The answer is no.
Yeah, there's some emails we cannot respond to. I'm really sorry. Yes. Anyway.
Oh, that's so funny. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Facebook.com/MotoPod. You can always donate through there. You can do it through the MotoPodcast.com fan page. And really, we appreciate it. Trust me, it helps. Our hosting bills are kind of expensive.
Oh, and actually, you could also, if you do it through the web page, that goes to Bob.
Yep.
And he does. We could actually use some funds in that direction because the bills are coming up.
Yep. And hang out. We look forward to seeing you all at the rounds that we attend this year. I know that Martin is gearing up for Silverstone.
Nice.
What are your plans for this year, Jules? What GPs are you planning on attending?
Well, I don't want to overpromise, but the plan is to hit Mugello,
okay,
which is, you know, obviously on my must-do list before I die. I don't want to do these too fast because I don't want to die yet. Because Sachsenring is so close, we may hit Sachsenring as well, and then of course Laguna and Indy.
Okay, well, and Laguna and Indy are in my plans, and I have
and Miller for Superbikes.
Ann Miller as well.
And AMA. I'll see you in May.
Yeah, well, and that's coming up not too soon.
Not too soon.
My plans are Andy Miller, Laguna, of course, but I want to go to Moscow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You want to go to Moscow.
I have to go to Moscow. I'm telling you, I just have to. That, tell me, would that wouldn't be cool?
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
That'd be cool.
And so we'll figure out how to make that happen. Let's kill this thing. It's skittering across my floor, and I'm going to step on it pretty quick.
I didn't get to hear the coyotes. I'm kind of bummed. All right.
I know.
Make a coyote sound, Jim, and let's get out of here.
Nah, fuck that. I can't even do it.
All right.
You cut that out.
You know,
all right,
I won't.
Folks, thanks a bunch for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Guys make real coffee. Cool. Can I have a skim milk cappuccino but not too strong? Maybe not half strength but not too strong. Yeah, that would be good. And I'll take one of those muffins into protected custody as well.
Alright, we have chocolate.